is the Thursday, June 10th, 2021 meeting of the Cambria Community Services District. And it's a regular meeting of the board. So as a call to order, and will everyone join me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. And we can establish a quorum. All board members are here. And we'll move on then to 1D, President's Report. I don't have anything of any pressing nature that I need to discuss today. So what we'll do is move on to 1E, which is the agenda review and additions or deletions. Are there any changes, additions, deletions from any of the board members regarding the agenda? All right, seeing none, we'll move on. So first out is the number two, the board member communications. So at this point, any board member who may make an announcement, report briefly on his or her activities, or to ask a question for clarification. Is there anyone who has anything that they would like to address to their fellow board members or have a question about? Hands up, Vice President Howell.
Thank you. Yes, I just wanted to announce that I will, something has come up and I will need to leave the meeting early today, a few minutes before 4 o'clock. So I just want to let people know in advance so you won't think that something strange is happening, like I just got mad and walked away or something. Just let everybody know.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's appreciated. All right. I don't see any other directors with action. So we'll move on to item three, the Coase Commission report. And Mr. Niffen, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Good. Great. Thank you. Don't have anything necessarily that we probably all don't know. So I thought that I'll just be quick and then maybe take some time for some questions, and maybe that'll open up some discussion to what we're talking about. The skate park is, being developed. The plan is in the process. They're working on the survey. We hear the survey's done. Haven't seen it, but we hear that it's done. They're just waiting on some geological work, which could take up to 9 weeks to get what I call the holes being dug to find out what is actually underneath underneath the ground there. And so we're waiting on that. The 9 weeks scares me a little bit just in regards to the grant. I just want to make sure that we're on top of the game to be able to still get that grant by the end of the year, and that all those T's are crossed and I's dotted. So that's one thing that I want to report a concern on. And then the other thing that we talked a little bit about briefly at our meeting, one of the catchwords floating around right now is transparency. So I'm going to use that word just to try to catch everybody's attention. But we've talked about the timeline for the skate park. And we said, oh, let's make a timeline and let's put it on the website so everybody can kind of know what's going on. But we have found that to be difficult. Like, we've got this page on the website that's the PROS website, but we're not really sure who's in control of that and who can actually put stuff on it. And how do we communicate using that particular venue? Do we have to run everything through it, admin and blah, blah, blah? So the timeline of we built one outside of the CCSD, and that was not rejected, but it wasn't accepted as the timeline. So we've never really made an official timeline to put on the website so the community could see where we're actually going with this project. So that's one of the, sideline frustrations, but it's not that big of a deal. We're happy to be moving forward and getting this thing going. The kids are into it. They've got a project going over the 4th of July and some other upcoming fundraisers for that. Okay. And other than that, I'll just leave it there and take some questions if anybody had any.
Okay. I can't speak for the board in total on that as far as the timeline's concerned, but I wouldn't be surprised if we wouldn't need to at least get some information on the boring and testing, because getting some of that information lined up to understand what the total project would represent in time and effort. It's tough to do a timeline until you have some of those markers in place to be able to judge. So we may have to get some pieces of information for it first. And I'll check with the other directors. It would seem that the timeline itself for the website is probably something that would have to be managed by and review mechanism of the CCSD, the general manager and the staff, because the website itself is the CCSD website. Yeah. So yeah. The access to it is only going to be through CCSD, and the information when it's there and it's represented as CCSD information has to be managed by them too. Does that make sense to folks?
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. Yeah.
Okay. Hopefully that helps give some feedback to what the expectation would be. Okay. Are there any other, are there any questions that anyone has for Mr. Niffen regarding the skate park? Vice President Howell?
Yeah, I just had a follow-up on your previous talk. It sounds like what I'm hearing is that if a timeline is established, it needs to be adopted by the board. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I don't know that it would need to be adopted by the board, but I think it would have to be part of an internal process for the general manager and staff to manage, because they're the ones that are closest to that information, and we would expect statuses against it if and when it's established in that way.
Oh, thank you.
And GMY Gold, do you feel differently in that regard, or?
I actually do.
Okay.
Because the board has only authorized me to do a design. And so it would be disingenuous and inappropriate, I think, in my view, to lead anyone on with a timeline through construction when we haven't authorized anything past design. And we don't have funding for anything past design.
Right. I agree. And I guess in my own mind, I was thinking in incrementally, not as a timeline for skates on the street. I was thinking more in times of increments for information that we have available to us. And as you say, also appropriately, whatever has been directed by the board is an authority for the CCSD GM. Good point taken. Okay. Vice President Howell.
I wonder if, though, perhaps it would be possible. I'm just trying to get through. I gather that information perhaps needs to get out to the advocates of the park. Maybe not a timeline, but a list of milestones or tasks that will need to be accomplished in order to reach the goal. That might be something that could be useful and might help the morale of the people who are trying to raise this money. Just a thought.
Okay, and there may be something to work with there. We can discuss it with the GM, Vice President Howell, because there was something that was produced previously in that regard, and so it's possible that it could be fine tuned some more. Some additional information could be added to it, but we can work with the GM in that. Director Farmer.
Thank you. Yes, I believe the timeline, the previous timeline, was actually drawn up by Skate Cambria, the organization that's raising funds to help build the skate park. So perhaps at some point in the relatively near future, we could have staff and maybe folks from the PROS committee and people from this nonprofit organization that is also involved to come up with a reasonable timeline for the community to be able to access. And so that's just my feeling on it. I'm kind of piggybacking on what Vice President Howell just recently said. So thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right. Are there any other questions then for Mr. Niffen? Any additional information? Well, seeing none, then thank you for your time
thank
and coming
you.
In today.
Yeah. Have a good afternoon.
Okay. Thank you, Steve. All right. With completion of the PROS Commission report of item 3, we move to item 4, public comment. And I direct the paragraph that we've got with public comment interest within the jurisdiction of the board, but not on the agenda today. And of course, compliance with the Brown Act, and each speaker has 3 minutes. So let me check for attendees. I'm assuming, yes, we have several folks. So Osana, would you like to please introduce the folks who'd like to speak publicly?
Yes, Michael Lyons, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. Having listened lately to several public meetings such as this one, I have noted one member of the public repeatedly issuing threats to RCCSD to, quote, refer the matter to the district attorney. This indicates to me a rude and perhaps all-time low atmosphere of antagonism between the district and the public. I assure you that this attitude does not represent the way I feel, and it's a very destructive diversion from the real work at hand here, which is, of course, infrastructure, water, sewer, fire protection, and the use of public lands. Now, I urge all of you who are listening in here to imagine that you have a huge red reset button in front of you. Please listen to the sentiment of what I'm about to say, with apologies to those who value the preservation of iambic pentameter. I label this a Cambrian lament. It is often the case that slowing the pace is the reason that folks immigrate here. They're looking for calm, trees, sea, weather's balm, but nowadays everything's a debate here. Vitally in need of community services to be provided, water, sewer, fire safety, Cambrians have decided to task elected volunteer CCSD directors to give guidance without pay to diligent staff toiling for us every day. For their efforts, they're all due respect and civility. Sadly, what they're getting from some destroys any hope of tranquility. Venom, argument, and anger have lately displayed where trust and gratitude ought to replace their claims that all's going wrongly. Let's start anew with a fresh point of view. Assume transparency, honesty, goodwill. Of this, I feel strongly. Never lose sight of important tasks in front of us, so clear, providing essential services for tranquility seekers living and visiting here. Not every public meeting should mimic World War II, yelling accusations, falsehoods, and threats. These we must eschew. We'll return to priorities that have long been agreed by discussion, mutual respect, and consensus indeed. In time, changing what is today, regrettably, Cambria's lament into an atmosphere of understanding, cooperation, and public content. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Osana?
Yes. Ms. Dickerson, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Osana. Thank you, Chair Steidel. At the meeting on May 20th, I was speaking, and I was, I think, rudely interrupted by President Steidel in saying that my time had expired. I wrote to President Steidel on May 25th, 5 days after the board meeting, and I CC'd the board and Osana. Here is what I wrote. President Steidel, I would like to bring to your attention that the May 20th CCSD board meeting during public comment following agenda item 6E, I was making comments when you interrupted me to inform me that my time had expired. I found that hard to believe at the time, and in watching portions of the meeting today, that was May 25th, I timed my comments. Please check the timing from when Osana called on me to comment at 2:40:12 into the meeting. You interrupted me to inform me that my time had expired at 2:42:04. The difference between the time I was asked to speak by Osana and when you asked me to stop was 1:92. So which 1:92, which meant that I had 1:08 remaining of my 3-minute allotted time for public comment. Before I commented, Crosby Schwartz spoke. When you informed Crosby that his 3 minutes had expired, Crosby asked if he could complete his comment. You responded by saying he could have another 15 seconds. Good for you. Fairness, however, is not something that I've witnessed with your approach to public comment, certainly in my case. I would ask that you please keep accurate timing of public comments. 3 minutes is all we get after all. Maybe it would help if Osana was keeping track as well. I noticed that the San Simeon CSD uses an egg timer to help in keeping track of public comment periods. That may be not a bad idea for the CCSD. I never received a response from President Stidell or anyone, but it was directed to her as she's the one that said my time had expired. It obviously had not. Anybody can go back and check that. But I really resent the fact that I am being asked constantly or being interrupted by President Stidell to finish my comments before my 3 minutes is up. So that's the point I'm making and communicating with the public. That's not the best way to go about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Dickinson. And Osana?
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson. Christine Heinrichs, go ahead, please. Christine, if you could unmute yourself.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity to comment on public comment, Madam President. As the person chairing the meeting, you have restricted public comment from previous conventions, which is within your prerogative. You allow the public to comment only at the beginning of discussion before Board members have discussed the item or staff members have given their reports. This has curtailed the public's ability to make relevant comments, as in the discussion of changing the name of the emergency water supply project, sustainable water facility. By allowing the public to comment only before the board discussion, the public were able to comment only on names that in board discussion were not even under consideration and not on the names that were. No public comments were heard on the name the board eventually adopted. The public is thus silenced on issues of public concern. Board and staff add information that is not included in the agenda packet. You often interrupt speakers and cut off the microphone, cutting speakers short. Mr. Hirsch informed you that allowing public comment only at the beginning of the item does meet the minimum legal requirement for allowing the public to participate. However, I asked the other directors to discuss these changes and decide as a board if limiting public comment in this way, only to meet the minimum legal requirement, is how they want as a board to welcome public input. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. And Osana.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Dr. Bettenhausen, go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. I was not going to speak in public comment. I didn't have anything particular I wanted to say, but I was just inspired by Mr. Lyons. As you might know, I have a Bachelor of Arts in English. Part of my work was with the Writers' Workshop, and I also have a PhD in literary criticism. I want to say publicly, for the edification of the multitudes who are watching, I have never heard iambic pentameter in that interpretation of the phrase. I am stunned by the opportunity to learn more about poetry by watching the CCSD meeting. It's a diversification of the public's comment, and I welcome that immensely. So I would hope that Mr. Lyons would post on social media or Nextdoor or NCAC, which he chairs, his poem, because there was an echo effect in my computer anyhow, and it was very hard to understand exactly what the content was of his poem. So I'm sure it would be worth the while of all of us in Cambria to look at it carefully, to study it, to analyze his perspective and his standards of excellence for community and public service. So please, would you, President Steidel, pass along this public comment to Mr. Lyons and ask him if he would be so gracious unto us all to publish his poem and allow, of course, those of us who have some interest in literary criticism or public analysis and public policy ethics to further comment on it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Just for your reference, Michael Lyons is still participating in the meeting, and so I'm sure he was able to hear your request to him for posting on social media. So obviously I'll leave it to him as an individual decision. All right, Osana, are there any other public speakers or do we have any written comments?
Actually, Dr. Bettenhausen, we raised her hand.
All right.
President Steidel, I thank you for your comment, but I want to tell everybody, I have no idea who's attending your meeting. That is not public information. I see the marvelous 9 faces on the screen, and that's it. Oops, 8. Somebody just went away. So please, I'm glad he's still attending. That's excellent. So I'm glad he heard my comments, President Steidel. But please do remember, those of us watching have no idea who's attending your meeting, and you have no right under the Brown Act to know either. Thank you.
Well, it's difficult to call on people without knowing that they are there. My only reason in having mentioned it, Dr. Bettenhausen, is that I recognize that you wouldn't know that he was there, and I was just passing information on to you. That was my sole purpose. So I apologize if you found that offensive. Okay, so any written comments? Osana?
It was Christine Heinrichs, and she spoke. So
all right. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Then we will go ahead and move forward to the consent agenda. And I'll ask first if there are any requests from any of the directors to remove any of the 3 items there from the consent agenda and move it to regular business. I don't see any. All right. Then is there any public comment related to the consent agenda? Director Farmer, did you put up your hand after I moved on?
I moved a little slowly there. I just wanted to comment on item 5C with regard to the election of vacancies, addressing the vacancies on the board and using the ranked choice voting and the last opportunity if things don't work out and we can't come to a conclusion, meaning the board, as to who the next board member would be, that it would go on to the Board of Supervisors. I realize that's the way it would have to be, but and it's, we've addressed this in the past, but hopefully it will never come to the point where the Board of Supervisors determines who it is that serves on our Board of Directors. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. All right. I do not see any other questions related to the consent agenda items. So with that in mind, I'll entertain a motion for acceptance of the consent agenda items. Director Gray? Unfortunately, you were muted.
Yeah, I move that we accept the consent agenda items.
Okay, and a second, Director Dean?
I'll second the motion.
All right, Osana, roll call, please.
Yes, to approve the consent agenda, Director Gray, how do you vote?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Dean, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Howell, aye. And President Seidel?
Aye.
President Seidel, aye. 5 ayes to approve the consent agenda.
All right. So the three items on the consent agenda today pass with a vote of 5-0. Thank you. We'll move on to the hearings and appeals then. GM Weigold, would you introduce the first one, please?
Yes, President Steidel, agenda item 6A is public hearing to discuss and consider adoption of resolution 17-2021, confirming the 2020 fire hazard fuel reduction itemized report of the Cambria Community Services District. Staff recommends that you conduct a public hearing to consider the itemized report on costs incurred and start that by opening a public hearing, receiving public testimony, and consider any objections from affected property owners. Close the public hearing and make any modifications to the itemized cost report deemed necessary. And two, that the board adopt resolution 17-2021. Confirming the itemized cost.
So the only issue is that the printed copy I have in front of me says resolution 16-2021. We're talking about 5A, correct?
6A.
6A.
Oh, geez. I didn't turn over my stack. I apologize. Sorry for the confusion. 17-2021. Thank you, GM Weigold. All right. So.
And President Seidel, I'd add that Finance Manager Duffield is standing by to ask any answer any questions as well.
Okay, fine. Thank you. So with that, I would like to open the public hearing for the discussion of confirming the 2020 fuel hazard fuel reduction itemized report. And with that also, do we have anyone from the public who wanted to comment on this? Lasana?
I do not have any written, and I don't see any hands up.
I'm sorry, I couldn't quite understand you.
I don't have any written comments, or I don't see any hands up either.
All right. Okay, thank you. With that then, we close the public hearing and move it to discussion by the board. Do any of the board members have any questions or discussion items relative to this item? And seeing none, then I will entertain Director Farmer.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My fingers are moving slowly to get to the raised hand. I just want to briefly ask why there's such a wide variation with regard to contractor costs. That probably has something to do with the size of the property. I don't know, size of the parcel or whatever. So I just wanted, like I said, some clarification on that.
Ms. Duffield, do you have any specifics on that?
Sure, President Steidel, I can answer that. So it's based on what actual work is required at each job site. So when the contract is hired, he may just have to do minor weeding on the parcel. And that would just be like some labor that would be required, maybe some equipment time and hauls to the landfill. If they have to remove a fallen tree or a lot of shrubs or anything more serious, then that would be an increased cost. So it's based on the actual cost that the contractor has at each particular assessor parcel location.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions? And Osana, let me ask, I should have checked with you to see if there are any written comments from the public. I know that we didn't have any. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you did. We're good.
So,
there are no written.
There are no guys. Thank you. All right. Then I will entertain a motion regarding agenda item 6A. And Director Dean?
I move that we adopt Resolution 17-2021 confirming the 2020 fire hazard fuel reduction itemized report of the Cambria Community Services District.
And a second, please.
I second.
Thank you. Osana, roll call, please.
All right. For adopting Resolution 17-2021. Director Dean, how do you vote?
Aye.
Director Dean, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Howell, aye. President Steidel?
Aye.
President Steidel, aye. 5 ayes. Thank you.
Thank you, Osana. So agenda item 6A, adoption of resolution 17-2021 is approved and passes 5-0. Thank you. The next public hearing item that we have, 6B, approval of the fire suppression benefit assessment. And GM Weigold, can you introduce the topic, please?
Yes, President Steidel. Agenda item 6B is a public hearing to discuss and consider resolution 18-2021 approving a fire suppression benefit assessment consumer price index adjustment at the rate of 2.9% for fiscal year 2021/2022 and confirming the itemized report to collect the assessment on the county tax rolls. Staff recommends that the board received the staff report, opened the public hearing, received public comment, closed the public hearing, have board comment, and lastly, adopt resolution 18-2021 approving a 2.9% CPI adjustment in the existing fire suppression benefit assessment rates effective July 1st, 2021.
Okay. And,
Finance Manager Duffield is also standing by again. To discuss any detail on this report.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. So we received the staff report, and so I open this public hearing to discuss the Resolution 18-2021 for the Fire Suppression Benefit Assessment, CPI adjustment. And Osana, do we have public comment?
There is no written, and looking at hands. Nobody has raised their
hand. All right. And do we have any written comment?
No written.
No. All right. Fine. I bring that back then to close the public hearing and discussion from the directors. Any discussion, any questions for Ms. Duffield? All right. Seeing none. I'll entertain a motion for the resolution then, please. And Vice President Howell?
Thank you. I move to adopt resolution 18-2021 approving a fire suppression benefit assessment consumer price index adjustment at the rate of 2.9% for fiscal year 2021 to 2022 and confirming the itemized report to collect the assessment on the county tax rolls.
Thank you. And a second from you, Director Dean. Is that what I'm seeing? Okay. Thank you. Motion. Osana, roll call, please.
Yes, for adopting resolution 18-2021, direct Vice President Howell, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Vice President Howell, aye. Thank you. Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Dean, aye. Thank you. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Thank you. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Thank you. And President Steidel? President Steidel, your turn.
Thank you. Aye.
Aye. President Steidel, aye. I will speak a little louder.
Thank you.
So five ayes unanimously. Thank you for resolution 18-2021.
So agenda item 6B, resolution 18-2021, approval of the fire suppression benefit assessment passes with a vote of 5-0. Thank you. And our last public hearing item for this meeting, 6C, GMY Gold, will you introduce, please?
Yes, President Steidel, agenda item 6C is a public hearing to consider adoption of resolution 19-2021, confirming the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges on the county tax rolls. Staff recommends that the board receive the staff report and review the itemized report for delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges, open a public hearing, take public testimony, close the public comment, close the public hearing, have discussion among the board members, and lastly, recommend adopt resolution 19-2021, confirming the itemized report. Again, Finance Manager Duffield is standing by for more details on this item.
Okay, thank you. So with that, I will open the public hearing regarding the itemized report to collect delinquent solid waste and disposal charges on the county tax rolls. Is there anyone from the public who would like to address this?
There is no written comment, and I don't see any raised hands.
All right, thank you, Asana. I will then close the public hearing and bring it back to the board for discussion. Is there anyone, any amongst the directors who have any questions or comment regarding this item? Seeing none, then I'll entertain a motion for this. Director Dean, I believe your hand was up first.
I move, where'd it go? We adopt resolution 19-2021, confirming the itemized report. Oh, let's see, that's not the right spot, is it?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Confirming the itemized report describing each parcel and the amount of delinquent solid waste collection and disposal charges to be collected against such a parcel.
I second.
Thank you, Director Gray. And Osana, roll call, please.
Yes, to adopt resolution 19-2021, Director Dean, how do you vote?
Aye.
Okay, Director Dean, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Thank you. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Thank you. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Howell, aye. Thank you. President Steidel?
Aye.
President Steidel, aye. Thank you. Five ayes.
All right. Thank you, Osana. So agenda item 6C for resolution 19-2021, confirming this itemized report on delinquent solid waste passes with a vote of 5-0. Thank you. All right, that disposes of our public hearing items. And we will move on to regular business. And item 5A, if you would introduce that, GMY Gold.
7A.
Say 7A.
Yes, President Steidel. Agenda item 7A is discussion and consideration to adopt ordinance 01-2021, amending Article 5 of Title 3, Section 3.04.030 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code, changing reference to the Sustainable Water Facility, or SWF, to the Water Reclamation Facility, WRF. Staff recommends the board adopt ordinance number 01-2021, which will amend section 3.04.030 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code. In order to proceed, the board should move to adopt the ordinance by title only and waive further reading. If you have any further questions, we have District Council Carmel standing by as well.
All right, thank you. Before I go to public comment on this, just ask if any of the board members have any questions or clarifications before we go to public comment. Okay, seeing none, I have one. I just wanted to mention that this is an administrative action only. It's to amend the district code, and the need for this actually was identified by the staff back on April 8th when we asked them to indicate to us what changes would need to be made administratively regarding wording. And so that's the case with this particular agenda item and to amend the ordinance. And what I will do then is move to public comment, please. Osana?
Yes, I have Tina Dickinson. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Osana. My question probably, Chair Steidel, is for legal counsel, but through you, how is it possible that the name change was even allowed when it was not on the agenda? How was it possible for a new name for the facility to only come up during the board discussion, but prior comment from the public was for the SW, the only name that was mentioned was the SWF in the description on the agenda. I don't understand how it's possible for the board to have discussed, and then acted upon something that the public had never heard of. So the public never was able to comment on this item. How is it possible for them to have the board to have acted on this and voted? So I'd hope Mr. Carmel could give me a response. Thank you.
Well, Mr. Carmel, I don't know whether you want to speak to that. I mean, I can, to the extent that the board didn't have a predisposed opinion on it, and that's why it came to the board for discussion. It wasn't, no one of the board members had a specific charge, whatever the renaming might be. The conversation was for renaming the facility, and the discussion that went through several different suggestions that were brought forward by members. And so the outcome of the meeting was the concurrence of the members towards a single name that was discussed as part of the agenda item. Mr. Carmel, is there something else that should be added to that?
No, President Steidel. The agenda description complied with the Brown Act. I believe it was something to the effect of discussion and consideration of changing the name of the Sustainable Water Facility. And as you say, that name change could have been one of 100 different variations.
Exactly.
We really weren't going to list any of them because we had no idea what the name change was going to be. And the Brown Act really just requires you to frame the potential action, which is what it did.
Okay. Thank you for that. All right. Is there any other public comment? Osana?
There is no written, and I do not see any hands.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll bring it back to the board for discussion then. Is there any item for discussion that any of the directors have or questions? Okay, well, seeing none, I will then entertain a motion for Director Farmer.
I would just like to, I'm just curious, because it references on this item here, you know, the name change, and yet in the ordinance here, in the three pages of the ordinance, only in one spot is the WRF even mentioned, and that's on page 57 under small b, water reclamation facility uses charges and WRF operating charges. Other than that, I don't see this name change referenced anywhere.
So, well, there it is in the title also on the first page, describing the ordinance.
I understand that. But what I'm saying is, in the ordinance itself, that's the only place that it's mentioned. You know, it's essentially a relief from fees and charges in special circumstances is basically what this is all about.
I agree.
Well, it just confuses me a little bit.
Well, that's why I made reference to it being administrative, because previously this ordinance existed with reference to SWF. And so legally what we need to do is change the district code where that terminology or acronym existed. And in the case of this particular item of the municipal code, that was the only place within the document that existed. And so that's what the revision is. It's strictly administrative, and these are the types of things that were annotated in that listing of actions that the staff had brought forward when the board asked them what kind of changes it would represent.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome. Are there any other questions or comments?
Director Gray had his hand up.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Yeah. Director Gray?
I was just going to make a motion.
That's what I was expecting. Okay, thank you. So yeah, I entertain a motion for acceptance of agenda item.
I move the Board of Directors adopt ordinance number 01-2021, which will amend section 3.04.030 of the Cambry Community Services District Municipal Code, and to adopt the ordinance by title only and to waive further reading.
Okay, and a second? Okay, Director and Vice President Howell. Okay.
I'll second it.
Thank you. All right, so Asana, roll call, please.
Madam President?
Yes.
I wanted to read you have to read the entire title of the ordinance, so let me finish that.
Oh, all right, thank you.
It's actually an ordinance amending section 3.04.030 of the Cambria Community Services District Municipal Code relating to the water reclamation facility.
Thank you. Osana, roll call, please.
Yes. This is to adopt ordinance number 012021, amending title 4. Amending Article 4 of Title 3, Section 3.04.030. And Vice President Howell, how do you vote?
Aye.
Vice President Howell, aye. Thank you. And actually, Director Gray was aye. The one made the motion. So let me back aye. Up for a second. Yeah. Director Gray, how do you vote?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Howell, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Dean, aye. Thank you. And Director Farmer?
Let me just say that even though I voted for the name change, it's only because I was voting against the SWF terminology. So I'm and not necessarily favorable toward the WRF. So I am voting no. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer No, and President Seidel.
Yes.
President Seidel, aye. And 4 ayes and 1 nay. Thank you.
Thank you. So the agenda item 7A for adoption of Ordinance 01-2021, amending Article 4, Title 3, Section 3.04.030, has approved, been approved on a vote of 4-1. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, that takes care of regular business item 7A, and we move to 7B. And GM Weichel, will you introduce the item for us, please?
Yes, President Steidel, agenda item 7B is discussion and consideration of the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, demand components, and proposed water shortage stages of the 2020 Water Shortage Contingency Plan. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors discuss and consider the public draft of the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan and the 2020 Water Shortage Contingency Plan. District Engineer D'Enzo has a short presentation to update you on the changes made since the last presentation, pending your public comment.
All right. In the case of this, I will ask if the board would like to entertain the idea of having the information that Mr. D'Enzo has presented first before we move to public comment. Is there, okay, fine. Then we will take that action. So GM Weichel and Mr. D'Enzo, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, yes, thank you, President Steidel. So the intent of this meeting is not, this is not the official hearing to adopt the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan, nor the 2020 Water Shortage Contingency Plan. The point of this is to introduce the documents that are available to the public that has been released since May 28th. There is a hard copy available in the office if need be between 9 and 4, but it's also available on our website for you all to be able to make comments. I'm glad to report that we have received a couple of comments from the public already, some really good comments, and so that's really the intent of this. I'm going to summarize for you. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen here for a second.
All right.
Okay. So I'm going to show you first. So on the website, under Urban Water Management Plan, and actually let me go to the homepage for a second. To show you how you can get to the Urban Water Management Plan. So here, when you first go to the CCSD website, you're going to see this homepage, and you know you can click here on the front panel, and it says Urban Water Management Plan. If you click that, that'll take you to the current draft of the Urban Water Management Plan. So there's the ones that are showed up in the front here, this is the current draft. This is the public review draft. And then these are the appendices that are associated with it. The ones that are not, as far as the appendices that are shown, haven't been, they're not available yet, for example, because there's one of the appendices are the resolutions. And that's going to be introduced next week. I also wanted to let everyone know that the archived, the 2015 Urban Watershed Management Plan is also available here on the same website link if you wanted to compare the two. So I wanted to let everyone know that just so that there's no confusion as far as the availability of these documents. And they've been available since May 28th. And I'm like I said, I'm glad that I've gotten some good comments already. One thing that I do want to make note of is that there's this appendix called Appendix A called UWMP Checklist Draft. And this is a summary. I'll just show it on this main page here. This is a summary of all of the different things that were introduced in the new 2020 guidebook. There's you know a lot of things on this checklist and where it's found in the current draft. So that's a good guide for you if you wanted to take a deep dive into the plan on the things that were introduced in 2020 and what chapter where we addressed it in the draft. So that's I wanted to let everyone know that. For those of you who, also who wants to get a good feel for the draft itself, I do want to note that that a good way to do it is to read the executive summary, and the executive summary is in the middle here, where it's the first 28 pages of this document, and it basically summarizes all of the findings in a nice concise format. So if you feel like you didn't have time to read the entire document, and if you wanted to get a good feel for what's discussed, the main things that are discussed, then just read the executive summary. And if something interests you in the executive summary, you can certainly go to the main part of the document. So I wanted to make mention of that. So a couple of things that are new that we already introduced in the first meeting that we shared about this was in the May 20th meeting, was that there's going to be a water shortage contingency plan that's new. It's not new in the sense that it's never been done before, but it's new in that it's going to be a standalone document. And with that standalone document, there's also the new thing in the new 2020 plan that requires the new six stages of drought. The six stages of drought was introduced in the meeting prior to this meeting. The only change really that your board here suggested to us was a tiered version of the penalty surcharges. And so I'm going to share that here with you now. So what we shared with you the six stages, and we shared that that stage five and six was going to be the equivalent stage three that we have now. So stage five and six would be the equivalent of stage three. And it would be the time where we would run the SW or the WRF if need be. And it would also be the time when we would reduce the water use allocations. So it's going to go for, so as you can note right here, the water use allocation per permanent resident would be 2 units per month. Commercial use allocation would be reduced to 2 units. Or 75% of average of the last 12 months water use, whichever is less. And then vacation rental allocation would be 2 units per month. So that's a new change from this that was actually already, which wasn't changed from the last board meeting. You all approved of that change that was also approved of by the R&I committee. And the new thing that we introduced in this that was a change from the May 20th meeting was this penalty charge use allocation. If going over the allocation, if water use exceeds 25% of the allocation, then the penalty would be 500% of the units going over. And if it was over 25%, the the next tier would be a 1,000% surcharge or penalty surcharge on that for that particular customer's allocation. So that the idea here was that those who are trying to stay within the allocation, but doesn't quite get it, you know, they would be subject to a lesser penalty, if you will, than those who go above and beyond, you know, the attempted lower allocation, and that would be at 1,000%. So that's the major change from that your board directed staff to do, and the other thing too that both R and I and the board did direct staff to do was to change these percentages here from to actual numbers. So right now, as you can see on the screen, it says the San Simeon water level at 61% to 70% of normal. We would actually give you the number, and the final draft, which we will present at the next board hearing, will actually give that that exact well number, as well as also the WBE means Windsor Bridge East, and WBW means Windsor Bridge West. And these are water levels that are tied to Santa Rosa Creek. And also the gradient, the 9P2 to SS4, we right now it says 61% to 70% of the normal. We would actually give you the actual number gradient, instead of just giving you a percentage. So we will give that at the June 17th meeting. We didn't have that ready for this draft because the timing of when we needed to release the draft, we were still working on it, and but we will have it ready for you when we give you the final draft on June 17th, which is next week. So so that in a nutshell is the major change. The demand discussions that we introduced on May 20th didn't change. The population assumptions didn't change. Like what we said before, even though we do project a demand increase, a target goal, if you will, for development, this is just for water resources planning. It's not really intended to be a land use document. And we also wanted to clarify too that the models that were updated for this plan, we updated the model for the demand side, and we also updated the model for the supply side. We wanted to let you know and remind you that it is data, and we will continually be updating the model. That's why it's good to update the model every 5 years, because things do change as some things change from 2015 even. So that's one of the things that I wanted to introduce to you here. The other thing that that is somewhat new is the new requirement also is the 5-year drought assessment. So with that in the in one of the tables, it gets kind of confusing a little bit, because like what it does is it picks the lowest 5-year drought, an actual drought situation that we had historically, and we had to plan that and use that model to project in different scenarios within different development scenarios. So for example, here we use in table 7.4, for example, we talk about the supply totals here. 725 is the average that that we've chosen, is what the updated, and that's a historical number. And then and then it adds numbers here. And the reason why 2025 adds these particular numbers is because that it shows an assumption of the water reclamation facility being operational. So that's why some of these numbers are what they are. So 747, or like, for example, in the fifth year of drought, it says 744 acre feet is the supply total that we have. In reality, it's 744 is 494 plus 250. That's how we came up with that number. And that number is carried forward in 2030, 2035 under different demand scenarios. So that's an explanation for that. And I'm sure you all would have questions about that later on as well. But that is the one of the main differences also in this new format for the Urban Water Management Plan. So within the Urban Water Management Plan, Chapter 8 is where the Water Shortage Contingency Plan is located. But even though it's within a chapter of the Urban Water Management Plan, it will be a standalone document that would need to be adopted separately. And we would, and adopting it, we would codify it at a later point and would reference that as the new six stages to replace the three stages that we currently have now. So that is, in a nutshell, an introduction here. Like I said, this is just for informational purposes and to entertain how you want to address comments moving to the June 17th hearing. Also available here in this meeting is Dan Heimel. He's the lead project manager of this urban water management plan effort. He's also available for questions. And with that, this concludes my presentation, and I'm available for any kind of questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Danzo. I appreciate that summary up front also of the visual explanation of the points of access for the data so that it'd be easier for the community to navigate. What I will do now is go ahead and move back to taking public comment before we move on to board discussion. So Osana, public comment?
Yes, I have hands raised as well as written comments. So go with the hands raised at the moment.
So
I'll have Crosby and Laura Schwartz. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon, President Steidel and members of the board. I've reviewed this, the Urban Water Management Plan and the Water Shortage Contingency Plan, and have picked out several areas where the data seems to be either higher or lower than would be expected. I'll get into that in a minute. I'd also, with the president's indulgence, I'd like to give Laura an opportunity to speak also after I've concluded my comments. I submitted some written comments, but I'm not going to bore you with all that right now. I just want to pick out three representative comments that kind of frame what I consider to be a problem here. The first one comment is that future water demand estimates are too low because the population growth estimates are too low. The build-out reduction plan report states that 884 additional residential connections will be added to reach the 4,650 residential connection goal. Using an average household size of 2.03 from the Urban Water Management Plan section 3.4.1, the population will increase by 1,795 new connections or new customers, not 868 new customers. It's a difference of over 100%. It's significant and needs to be clarified, I guess, with the consultant. My next comment is that the future water supply estimates are too high because the WRF is assumed to supply 250 acre feet of usable water. Urban Water Management Plan Section 6.2.5 states that 60% of the reinjected water would enter CCSD's St. Simeon Creek aquifer potable water wells. Therefore, usable water supplied to CCSD customers by the WRF would be 150 acre feet per year, not 250 acre feet per year. My final comment is on the water shortage contingency plan. It does not mention an important shortage indicator for determining stages of drought. The acre feet of water remaining in the San Simeon Creek aquifer on any given date must be compared with the acre feet of water needed to reach the end of the dry season. If the remaining stored water is less than what is needed, additional conservation measures and WRF operation is needed, as would occur for stage 5 and stage 6. For additional details on how to determine the remaining volume of water, I see written public comment for the 5/20/21 board meeting. Thank you. And now if we could have Laura's comments, is that okay?
Certainly.
Thank you. Good afternoon, board and staff. It is very difficult to make a point in 3 minutes, but I'm gonna try, so please listen. In simple words, the Urban Water Master Plan is mandated and it's necessary for the future well-being of us Cambrians. So let's make it as accurate as possible. That's what this is all about. Of concern to me, aside from the 800 plus homes contemplated to be built, there are 1,200 existing underserved or vacant homes. And these people have been paying taxes, full property taxes all this time, so they need consideration. Using Appendix G, Madame's technical memorandum on page 6 on the notes box, what they say, our population is concentrated in 2,564 residences, but there's at least 3,850. So rounding that off, there's 1,200 homes in question. We must assume that these houses will be substantially filled and water use will be increased. Showing this, our vacancy rate is 32% versus the national average of 12. Section 3.41, that section. This will most likely change our vacancy rate from 32 to 12 from the national average is probably gonna go up. Showing this, home sales here have risen dramatically, as we all know, as moving to rural areas and telecommuting becomes more popular. So people are gonna be moving in here. Baby boomers are in their 70s or close to it, and they're retiring more. So those 1,200 houses potentially could fill up. Record immigration, as we know, more people per household. So let's correct the tables 7.2 and 7.3 and the assumption of excess water to reality. Let's flush, pardon the pun, out these problems before they happen again like in 2014. Don't publish a false sense of water security. Change those tables, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Schwartz. And Ray, was there a comment that?
Yes, I for your consideration to, I would like to formally respond to all of these comments. I know that you all got an email from Crosby with his comments. I would like to recommend that I respond in writing to those and make it as part of the packet for June 17th, because it's too difficult to explain it verbally here.
No, I agree, and I think that your suggestion in terms of a written attachment to the documentation will be looked at on the 17th is entirely appropriate. Okay. Thank you. Osana?
Yes, I'll have Christine Heinrichs. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Yes, I support everything Crosby and Laura said. And like them, my comments are longer than 3 minutes, so I'll just give you some excerpts. Because the UWMP will be a critical document in Cambria planning for the next few years, it is important to get it right. If the board adopts this version, it's important to note that it is factually incorrect in several significant places. Overall, as Crosby said, it tends to minimize Cambria's water problem by overestimating supply and underestimating demand. Also, using annual figures masks Cambria's water shortage during the dry season. Cambria has enough water for current residents and visitors during the rainy season. Cambria runs short of water at the end of the dry season. Continued pumping of well 9P7 during the dry season, when the well level is naturally low, could draw seawater into the aquifer at that time of year. This draft UWMP assumes that the EWS, SWF, WRF will get a permit to operate by 2025, and when operating, can provide 250 acre feet of water. Both of these are unlikely or impossible. The district has not been able in nearly a year to provide any additions to the CDP application, which was submitted only 13% complete. The district shows no progress on even providing the county planning department with enough information to act on the application. After the district completes the application, then the county has to evaluate it, making any recommendation. If county planning approves it at some date unknown in the future, the permit then goes before the Board of Supervisors, where questions will be raised before it can be approved, and then it will be appealed to the Coastal Commission. This cannot possibly be accomplished by 2025. Let's see. The plant as it stands now can only be operated at questionable output and substantial expense. The district still has no workable plan for disposing of the brine waste. Operating the plant full-time will produce 20,000 to 50,000 gallons of brine waste per day. Trucking it will cost millions of dollars, and the two facilities that have permits to accept such waste for disposal have not yet agreed that they have the capacity to accept that volume of brine. The brine waste alone makes operating the plant unworkable. The impact of the climate emergency is unclear. The UWMP uses figures from Santa Barbara showing an increase in precipitation by 2050 to 19.1 inches per year, but the fourth California climate change assessment estimates precipitation in San Luis Obispo County at 17.6
inches per year. Thank you, Ms.
Heinrichs. Thank you.
Susana?
Dr. Bettenhausen, go ahead, please.
Thank you very much. I sent you, President Steidel and other members of the board and staff, the email, an email this morning, and I assume that you will have time to read that before the 17th. And I want to ask, I want to say that I concur with Mr. and Ms. Crosby and Ms. Heinrichs' comments, but I want to ask a question. Did I understand correctly that the water shortage contingency plan taken up a week from today will be a separate document to set policy rather than a part of the urban water management plan, which does not set policy? So I'd like that clarified, please. I don't need that in writing, if you would tell Mr. D'Anzo, I would just like to hear, are these two separate items for different actions and different recommendations on the 17th? But I would like I certainly won't read my email on this morning, but I want to read out loud part of it because it really does pertain again to this urban water management plan. What I did in the email is quote what I sent in 2000 regarding the 2010 urban water management plan. And then I said again what I said about the 2015 urban water management plan. And then I copied part of an email I sent to some people in Cambria. And I want to read that because it says again that in the disclaimer that the CCSD is responsible for ensuring that all the requirements of the state have been met. There is no oversight here of the CCSD's urban water management plan and the implementation. But I think that Yuval Noah Harari was right when he wrote in Homo Deus that you want to know who you really are, ask dataism, then forget about mountains and museums. Have you had your DNA sequenced? No. What are you waiting for? Go and do it today and convince your grandparents, siblings, they need their DNA sequenced too. Their data is very valuable for you. And you have heard about these wearable biometric devices that measure your blood pressure and heart rate 24 hours a day. Good. Buy one of those, put it on, connect it to your smartphone. And while you are shopping, buy a mobile camera and microphone. Record everything you do and put it online. And allow Google and Facebook to read all your emails, monitor all your chats and messages, and keep a record for all your likes and clicks. If you do all that, then the great algorithms of the internet of all things will tell you whom to marry, which career to pursue, and whether to start a war. But where do these great algorithms come from, he asks. And I think when he describes dataism, that's D-A-T-A-I-S-M, I think dataism was the impetus for this water master plan from the CCSD, the so-called former SWF. And I do believe, if I may finish my last sentence, Madam President, I do believe that it is a wonderful production that has been offered to you to consider. And just like 2005, 2010, and 2015, it sets no policy. It simply meets a state requirement. Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. I have asked that this be part of the public record today, and I will ask the same again.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen.
You're very welcome, President Steidel. Thank you for the extra 13 seconds. Thank you.
Osana.
Yes, Tina Dickinson, go ahead, please.
Thank you. I'm very puzzled as to why we've been hearing for so long that the CDP would be available to the county, that the application would have been completed, and that in about a year, and this was from some months ago, that you would be getting the CDP. Why now are we, I'm going to read from your document, for the drought risk assessment that assesses surpluses or shortfalls over a five-year drought extending from today through 2025, then I'm going to skip part of it, but then it says here, water conservation measures are required to reduce demand because it is assumed that a regular coastal development permit, WRF, will not be obtained till 2025. Someone please explain why we've been hearing that the CDP for the facility would be complete, the application, and we would be getting it sometime in, you know, anytime like toward the end of the year or the middle of next year. Why the extension? What has caused that? And I would also ask for people that were not aware that their comments needed to be submitted by the 10th, that what if comments are coming in prior to the 17th or at the public hearing, how will those be addressed? And through you, President Steidel, Mr. D'Enzo, when you have no other meeting between the 17th and the 30th of June, prior to your July 1st submittal to the DWR. That's very, if you look at the public hearing notice, that's very, very, it's not clear at all. In fact, it is clear, but one would assume that the comments were supposed to be addressed by the 17th of the public hearing. So how did those, anybody that's submitting on that day or just prior, have their comments responded to? And that may include agencies as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson.
I'd like a response.
Not
from you.
This is public comment right now, not dialogue, ma'am.
Oh, good gracious.
Osana?
Yes. Brian Vucevic, go ahead, please.
Dr.
trying to keep it very simple, I have two concerns and one request. The concerns have to do with the specifically the tables that were shown in the executive summary and other places, where it shows that for the next 25 years, there is no real shortage of water in the community, using only 21 acre feet per year from the water reclamation facility. And that goes with my second concern, which is the general picture that shows over the next 25 years that the community has no shortages. And I go back to our history. We've lived here 30 years, and water has been number one concern for that entire time, including the question about the water reclamation facility, or what it was called before. And our past several years have had some major problems. We have gone without being able to water landscaping, as we all know, for over a year. And so I question these rosy picture, the rosy picture that's being shown. And then because of that, I would request to have Mr. D'Enzo undertake maybe a public forum to go into much more detail for the simpler people in the community like me, who don't really understand the picture that's being presented. So I feel that we need a public forum to educate the residents of this community on our situation, because we don't feel it's as rosy as you picture it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Are there any, I don't see any, are there any other written comments other than those that were already referred to by those who spoke?
Yes, I have one written comment, and they didn't speak, so I will read it.
All right.
From Melvin Doran regarding the Urban Water Management Plan. Dear Director Dean, I am writing to strongly encourage the Cambria Community Services District to withdraw its current application for a regular coastal development permit for the water reclamation facility. The permit application should be modified and resubmitted to clearly state that the facility will only be used to provide supplemental water in times of impending or existing drought conditions for existing customers only. Intent to serve letters or water will serve letters are still being approved, even though the district claimed Cambria was out of water in 2014. The CSD, San Luis Obispo County Planning, and the Board of Supervisors should deny all new construction while Cambria is in a moratorium. New home construction, extensive remodels, expanded events, and year-over-year increases in tourism threaten the delicate water supply existing residents rely on from San Simeon and Santa Rosa Creeks. Both the high operating costs and significant environmental impacts of the WRF make it highly unlikely that it will ever be able to reliably produce the additional water necessary to support incremental water connections. Use of the WRF should be reserved to protect existing ratepayers in times of drought. Thank you for your consideration, and please include my comment for consideration in the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan. Yours truly, Melvin Doran. Thank you.
Thank you, Asana.
And that is it for comments.
Thank you. And with that, then I will bring this back to the board for discussion. I would like to stay on the Urban Water Management Plan, though not continually veer off into conversations about the CDP. Unfortunately, with that last letter, that was predominantly what it was, but it was also a letter, not someone speaking. And so I guess, Mr. Carmel, if that occasion happens before and it's an issue for us, you'll let me know. Okay,
thank you.
All right, board discussion. We have not only Mr. D'Enzo available to us, but We have consultants who also participated. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here today and spending your time to be with us.
Thank you, President.
Is there anything specifically that anyone would like to ask? Let me get back to the panelists and find out. Director Gray, you appear to have been first in holding up your hand.
Yeah, I have a few questions about the draft. And first of all, I appreciate the work that has been done already by Mr. D'Enzo and the rest of the staff to update, to incorporate the suggestions and that were made and the concerns that were raised in this our first examination of this draft. And I think that's turned out very well. A couple of questions have come up, and, you know, as I read it over again and listening to some of the comments today, actually, too. And I think there are a couple of questions were fairly do need to be dealt with. First of all, the question about the CDP timing, I don't remember. I might not have read it carefully the first time, but the statement that the CDP will not be awarded until 2025 is new to me. At least, you know, I'd expected maybe a reaction, say, next year or something like that. And maybe the Coastal Commission would be taking some time after that. But it sounds like there's an assumption that it will be like four more or five more years. We need some clarification on that, I think, as to what that means exactly. Because my understanding is that in terms of the information that is needed and the studies that are needed, we are going to be completing the phase two study, the flow study around the 9P7 well, and then the in-stream flow study, the longer one, is going to proceed after that for an indefinite amount of time. And this may be why we're talking about the permit not being finalized until 2025, but I think there needs to be some clarification as to why that is, why that timetable is stretched out. One of my questions, the other question, the significant one at least, is this thing about the confusion I have about the figures that are given for WRF production. There are two sets of figures that are being used in this report. One is for the maximum production, 24/7, 6 months, at 400 gallons a minute. The other one is for the limited production of 8 weeks, 4 days a week, 9 hours a day, again, 400 gallons a minute. You use a figure of 21 acre feet, I think, for that latter figure, and then a figure of 250 acre feet for the maximum. My calculations say that, and this is talking about water coming out of, going into the aquifer, not picked up by the wells. My calculations give me a figure of about 320 acre feet for that maximum figure. And so there seems to be maybe an apples and oranges thing going on here. And also, I think at some point, it really needs to be explained to the public what it means that this facility produces water. And it's not just the water that gets to the production wells. It's also the uses of the water for as basically a dam to protect, you know, the aquifer from intrusion. I think there might be a need for a little bit more fleshing out of exactly what it means that it produces X amount of acre feet. Does it mean it could be acre feet for multiple purposes? So I think there's a lot of public confusion about that. So those are my two major areas of concern about the way this is presented now. I think it's a much a great improvement over the earlier UWMPs in terms of being a projection of water demand. Other people may ask about population and things like that, but I was concerned about those two particular areas.
Mr. D'Enzo, did you want to respond?
I would prefer if I could just respond to each of the questions, please. So may I respond to Director Gray's?
If it's something that we can, yes, if it's something that can be,
So
defined directly and specifically, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So regarding the characterization of CDP being available 2025, the intent there was not that, oh, we're going to get the CDP in 2025. The intent was there was going to be development starting again in 2025, because remember, the demand assumption was going to be no growth from between now and 2025, mm-hmm. and then 1%, which was an assumption that, again, that was an assumption that we made that was going to start in 2025. And the reason for that, we made that assumption was, if we were to get the CDP this year or even next year, there would still need to be other studies that the county would need to, other findings that the county would need to do, and maybe even perhaps, you know, to develop a land use, to develop land use authority. There might even be some environmental considerations that the county would need to do. And that's why we picked 2025 as that date. Again, it's an assumption, and we believe it is a conservative assumption, but it wasn't intended to be that, oh, we're going to get the CDP in 2025. It was more like the CDP was going to get it, and then the establishment of growth was going to be done by 2025. And I hope that clarifies it. I'll look at that discussion again in the draft, and if I mischaracterize it, I'll change that. Good. And regarding the, you know, you mentioned that if you're doing the calculation, 400 GPM, mm-hmm. you know, for 6 months, and you came up with 325 acre feet. What we're putting in there we've simplified it in this draft is that we're not running it 24/7. In a sense, because they're still going, I mean, we're not going to be producing water for 24/7. There's going to be some maintenance cycles figured in there. So mm-hmm. in essence, it's going, that number translates to more like 18 hours, because there's cleaning cycles that need to be incorporated within that 24. So that's, I'm afraid that we didn't want to explain too much. We explained as much as we could without explaining too much, but yeah. that's the answer to that short answer. So,
good. Just a further comment. Thank you. That very good. Clears it up for me on the production side. I would suggest, and I guess we'll make suggestions that the language about 2025 be clarified as to that being the date around then when building a growth might resume independent of the CDP, because I think what we're talking about here is a process that is, you know, it will go on after the CDP is awarded, having to do with, for instance, the in-stream flow study, having to do with water capacity and growth capacity in Cambria and environmental impacts. Mm-hmm. And that will go to the Coastal Commission conceivably as a separate process. And I think that's what we're talking about here. You can correct me if I'm wrong. But thank you for your answer.
Vice President Howe.
Thank you. Let me lower my hand here. I do have some comments here. This, again, I do like the document. I like what we've seen. I've been impressed by it. I do have a number of questions, largely issues of clarification and some points to make. And I tried to cut it down to something. I actually have bookmarks on about 24 different pages where I have things that I've, in another world, I might spend some time to talk about. But I do have a few points to say. But I do want to also make this point to everybody that, as I see it, this is I think Mr. D'Enzo said it quite clearly, and I believe someone else echoed that this is not a document for land use planning. So many of the discussions and concerns which we are hearing from the public and fellow directors have really more to do with issues of land use planning. So it's important, I think, that we do remember that this is a document meant to satisfy a state requirement. And if I were in the state, I would say probably this is the state asking the district to demonstrate that we have a plan and that it's a reasonable plan, because districts might not be responsible and might not be doing the necessary planning. So from that point, I just think we need to remember that, because many of these questions will come up in other contexts. that are not here. Having said that, what this plan purports to do is to predict the future. But as we are beginning to see, it's nearly impossible to predict the future, and it's becoming more impossible every day. We can no longer predict. We are seeing human beings behaving in ways which we had no idea that that was going to happen. I point to the recent sedition at the Capitol, which we really did not anticipate. Other aspects of human behavior and the plague, which, of course, nobody thought about, and there may be future plagues which we cannot plan for. And then again, the climate is completely up in the air. So any decisions made based upon previous climate figures are probably not going to be valid. Having said that, what I note is I'd like to make a few comments, and then I'll try to keep this fairly quick, and I may have some questions. Well, I think most of them have probably been answered. I think it's very important that everyone realize that this document is intended to be revised. This is not the last word on the matter. In fact, there's specific wording in there as to how and when, I mean, what kind of procedure must be used to amend this document. So we could certify this in July and turn around and amend it in September if we wanted to. There's nothing to prevent us from doing that. So point being that this is an ongoing project based upon assumptions which will probably have to be changed over time. I do, however, look forward to Mr. D'Enzo's answers to Mr. Crosby's, Mr. Schwartz's questions, because I think they did bespeak a certain very careful examination of the document, and I think I would be very interested to see how those are answered. Having said that, I think I will just make a couple of points and ask a question or two. Okay, I'll get the good points, things I like. Well, there's an issue on section 6.2.10.1 where it talks about climate change. The last paragraph suggests that we can expect more flooding and longer dry seasons. So I just want to make that point that that's a warning to us that perhaps we should start considering stormwater recapture sooner than later, because it does look if that's really going to be the situation. This is possibly this could be interpreted as a criticism or just a point. In 7.1.2.1 second paragraph, there's a reference to the Cronenberg and Yates study of 1998. And it seemed to me the study was being quoted for two reasons. One, which probably hasn't changed over the years, is how much it takes, what kind of rainfall it takes to recharge the aquifers. But there's another statement in there speaking about the frequency of dry years, but this is based upon a 1998 thing. So I'm not too sure that if that frequency that's in the Cronenberg and Yates study of 1998, if that's being used, you might want to look at that, because that really is old data. If you're speaking about climate issues, I think whatever happened back then, we don't know what's going to happen next year or even the year after that. Here is a very good point. 7.2.2, talking about the drought response, the DRA. What I like about this, and I think this is important, and it comes to, I think, what Director Gray may have been referring to, as well as one member of our public. The table 7.6 there shows how we could cope without the WRF for a five-year, for a series of, so I think that's kind of important to look at, because it does indicate if there are issues, if the WRF does not perform as expected or for other reasons we have problems in permitting, that table's definitely worth looking at. But there is one thing I would kind of ask about that. It looks that the number of commercial connections is not anticipated to change. Let me see, what am I trying to say? The table assumes constant demand. That is to say, no or fewer new connections, as you read across the top of the table. But it's not clear whether that includes commercial connections. And can we really reasonably assume that commercial connections will not increase? So that's That was one kind of thing that I was wondering about. And there is in 9.1.3, there may be a misstatement. It says that it speaks about the tiering, that our fees are tiered and so that to discourage overuse. And it is true, we do have a tiered fee structure, but commercial meters do not. They have a tiered structure in terms of the size of the meter, but they do not have, at least in our published rate sheet, they do not have a tiered usage charge. And that's a question to my fellow board members. If that's true and we do get into a shortage situation, we might need to think about tiering the charges for the commercial as well. But anyway, I think that may be a misstatement in the in that case. I'll just make two other points, which are points and questions, and it's not specific. When we talk about population, I had to work a little bit to try to figure out when we're talking about people and when we're talking about connections. In the demand things, we're really looking at connections, but then we also talk about people. So that might help to clarify, if there was some way to clarify that might help avoid confusion. Apropos of that as well, there's a statement in that, this is on page 3-7 of the, 3-8, where there it speaks that it's rounding to the nearest 100 people. If I figure that at the supposed 2.18 people per connection, that means that rounding to the nearest 100 could be as many as 23 connections involved. Now, I may have misunderstood that table completely, but I was a little concerned. The rounding seemed a little high, and unless if it's the intent to give a broad picture, it's fine. But I'm even disagreeing with myself here. It's not a planning document, so it perhaps does not need to be more specific. But I was a little nervous about that rounding. The only other thing, and I think it's been brought up in Crosby's thing, is references to the output from the WRF. Appear to be the gross output, that is to say the amount that's injected at which we're then going to pick up in our production well. So actually I have two questions on that. So in one case we're grouping the water, there are cases where that water supply, the gross production of the WRF is mixed in with the regular pumping out of our wells. So that what's coming out of the wells is potable, but the gross production of the WRF, only we're gonna get only a portion of that back. So I'm kind of wondering about grouping those together. It may not matter, and there may be very good reasons, Mr. D'Enzo, why you did not make that differentiation, because I do realize that water we re-inject into the aquifer will have effects in both directions, and you probably have to account for that. The only other thing that I wanted to mention was it appeared to be, and then I'm done, let me get this, oh yeah. Oh, I don't receive the location, but it did appear to be that there was issues having to do where there was some certain ambiguities or things where it looked to me like you might be needing the in-stream flow study to answer the kinds of questions. If I could, maybe in an offline conversation, I can point to the thing, but it did appear that there were some cases where certain things we really cannot know. Oh, that was it. It had to do with the water, the mound to prevent the seawater intrusion. Are we really going to know until we have the in-stream flow studies? But my suspicion is we're not going to know necessarily what the effect of the various different pumping scenarios would be on that mound. And as a kind of as a informational question as well is when we're in severe drought and the severe water conservation such that our perk ponds are not getting the full amount of effluent they're normally expected to get, what's going to happen to the mounds that those perk ponds are helping to create? And that's sort of a matter of concern. So I'm kind of wondering if we get into severe drought, have we really dealt with all the necessary variables? But I think it's a good job. I'd be willing to certify it as it is pretty much with just very few changes. Thank you, Ray, for your very hard work and for the consultants as well. And thank you for listening to a rather long thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. And also I want to thank you for several of the summary statements that you made initially as an orientation for the community, because I do think they really were important points. I thank you for being able to get those vocalized for the community. Director Dean.
I guess one of the benefits of being the third person to talk is most of my questions have already been asked. Except that I want to add on to one, I'll add on to one more thing that I don't think got clarified. Okay, in the five-year drought assessment, Section 7, Water Service Reliability and Drought Assessment, Table 7.4, this table assumes that the WRF is operational, and it assumes it is operational 24/7. It says in the five-year part that the water supply would be 744 acre feet, and that is the 494 plus the 250 acre feet from the WRF as water supply. We know that not that whole 250 acre feet will not make it up to the well field. We also heard, as Tom Gray is correct, Director Gray is correct, that part of that water that goes back does have a beneficial use of the mound. However, if we're looking at what water supply is available for the beneficial use of the public, we can't count on that gross 250 acre feet of water that the facility produces as being part of our water supply for the beneficial use of the public. So I kind of have a little concern about using the gross amount from the WRF as a available water supply. I think we need to more consider the percentage that we feel is going to get to the well field, because we know we're not going to be able to use that whole 250 acre feet coming out of the wells. It's not going to get to the wells. Okay, so that was one of my concerns. I think everybody else pretty much asked all the other questions that I had. I think this is a good document. I know that it is available to be revised in the future. So anything that comes up that determines that needs to change, it's going to be able to change. And I think I'm okay with it the way it is. My main concern was counting on that 200 acre feet gross production as actual being available water supply. Just a second, I just did think of something else and then it flew out of my head. It'll be right back. Okay, I guess I can't remember it. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sure too that Mr. Danza will be more than available to any one of us for some questions, mm-hmm. Additionally that may come up or something.
I remember. I'm sorry, I remember.
Oh, all right. Go okay. For it.
I'm sorry. Vice President Howell brought up a good point, and that is, in an extreme drought, when everybody's conserving, the amount of water that's going into the percolation ponds might not be enough. But I do recall asking that question before. And I do think, if I'm correct, and Mr. D'Anzo can correct me if I'm wrong, that part of the purpose of the piezometers is to monitor what the groundwater level is in the area below the percolation ponds. So we should know at some point if we are drawing more than we can, leaving enough for preventing seawater intrusion. We should be able to know when we're getting dangerously low to the point where that mound is reduced enough for seawater intrusion based on what the information is going to be that they are getting from the piezometers. Is that correct?
So the point of the main function of the piezometers is to monitor any kind of environmental harm affecting the creek. The The issue of seawater intrusion is basically relating to the gradient difference. And as long as we're maintaining that gradient difference between the 9P2 SS4, we would be in good position. So even though those assumptions are related, they're one is really for one use and one's really for the other. It's because like we would never, for example, we would never draw down that percolation pond to the point of harming the environment in that particular location. There would be issues with gradient, with seawater intrusion before that would signal our alarm bells, if you will, before that were to happen. So even though there is a contribution of the piezometers to the health of the perk basin in relationship to the creek, the purpose of that is not for seawater intrusion monitor. It's because we have other monitors for that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I can clarify, then it is the gradient between 9P2 and SS4 that determines whether we endanger a seawater intrusion.
We would look at that first before that would take higher priority than the piezometer readings.
Okay, thank you.
Well, and something that I think is a variable in all of that. Is potentially effects of climate change in terms of seawater or sea level rise. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we can anticipate and measure those things for how they exist for us right now, but, you know, 5, 7, 8, 10 years from now, it could be an entirely different balance that has to be maintained. And that's why it really talks to so much of this being measurable and adaptive to circumstances. And so it's, from my perspective, we set some things in place to be able to set measurements because you have to start someplace and you have to project in with some assumptions. But this is going to be a living document for us, and it isn't going to be a document that we'll wait another 5 years before we have to determine whether the assumption bases are difficult or cannot be maintained. I think it's an ongoing thing that we will probably, it will mature. The assumptions will mature and or adjust as necessary for the things that we don't know about.
Yeah.
So are there any other questions? So Daniel, you got off easy so far. Okay, Director Farmer.
Thank you. First, I want to commend everyone for their comments, whether we're members of the public or members of the board, and Mr. D'Enzo as well. I just want to mention a couple of things. About everything has been said, but the, how could we say it? The statements about water supply and water demand, obviously that situation, as I think has been implied by others, that there's a certain amount of unpredictability there. And so these figures, no matter how hard people have worked to determine them, probably can't be seen as accurate as we move forward into the unpredictable future. Also, both Ray and Vice President Howe, by the way, I noticed as Vice President Howe stated, he would have to leave the meeting a little before 4 o'clock. So he doesn't appear to be with us any longer. Both of them have said that this is not indicated as a land use planning, a land use document. Yet, if I'm not mistaken, it does indicate in this document that there will be, starting in 2025, the 1% population growth that will be implemented, and that population will increase over the next 20 years, and that intent to serve letters will be issued. I think you could say that's kind of like a land use document in one fashion or another. I also want to mention one more thing. obviously, and I think this was mentioned earlier with regard to how rapidly, all of a sudden, there's this rapid increase in homes being available, how quickly these homes are being visited, being purchased for a higher amount than was asked for. This indicates, once again, a very unpredictable future with regard to how many people are going to be living here. And I'll just use this example. I have a friend who lived over on Astor for many years, an elderly woman who used very little water. She sold her home, moved back east to be closer to family, and a middle-aged couple with children move into her home. Now, I don't know how many times a scenario like this is going to happen where one or two retired people leave the area, or I happen to know some folks up the road here who have a home and they just use it part-time. It's rarely visited. They have put that up for sale. We don't know what's going to happen in this situation, but once again, we have people right now that are moving here that are going to be living here full-time, whether it's couples or whether it's families. So the availability of water to supply an increasing, apparently increasing demand for it, even if there aren't further homes being built, that's a situation that needs to be considered as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. And Director, I don't see any hands up, but Director Gray, did you have, it seems like.
Well, okay, just briefly, I do think it's important for us to understand and the public to know that this is, you know, in fact, it's not a planning document. It means we're not committing to any course of action, but also it is very much basically a model for the future that will be constantly updated as new data come in. And I think one thing that Director Farmer is just mentioning, potential population increase or decrease, I think we're right now kind of in a little bit of a dead zone in terms of data because we haven't gotten the new census numbers yet to compare to, say, 2010. We've been relying on surveys, the American Community surveys that are have large margins of error. I think at the end of this year, for instance, we'll have a clear idea of whether Cambria is growing or shrinking. And we get a better sense of the demographics, if they've changed a lot over the last 10 years in terms of ages, family size, and so forth. So again, I mean, it's a work in progress. It's a document that's constantly going to be dynamic because it's going to be always responding to new data. And I think my questions aside about how the document explains how this WRF works with the mounds and stuff like that, I think that might need to be clarified a little more for the public. But I think this is about as good as we can do, given the inherent uncertainty of what we're facing.
Thank you, Director Gray. Director Dean.
I just wanted to thank Utilities Manager Ray D'Enzo for all the hard work that he did on this, along with his staff. I realize this was a very long, complicated process, and I think overall, this is a very good document, and I would like to thank them for all of their hard work. It's very much appreciated.
I second that.
And third it.
And I will thank Melissa and Megan and our consulting team. Melissa and Megan worked very hard. Just to reiterate what Director Gray said, it's statistics that we're having to deal with. And you know, there's obviously a lot of speculation about different things that can happen about the future. But we tried really hard to make this data driven. Using statistics, using the populations from the last 5 years, comparing it even with the previous history. So yeah, I think it's a good document, and you know, a lot of good work from our staff here. Melissa and Megan's particularly, and then Dan Heinold and his team at WSC.
Thank you, Ray. The board agrees with you, and it's an excellent work product that's taken a long time to be able to accomplish. So thank you. Let's see, the consideration, as I don't see any other hands, the consideration that we have here is just to basically to accept this updated information that's been brought to us today. The actual consideration or putting into resolution the UWMP will be at the meeting that happens later this month. So we are actually doing the consideration for this public draft of the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan and the Water Shortage Contingency Plan. So I'd like to entertain a motion for that, please. I believe we're prepared to do that. No, there are more questions? Director Dean?
I'm just not quite sure how to word the motion.
The recommendation, I think, actually, I think outlines well what it is that we're putting for consideration and voting on.
Okay, so is the motion to say that we are accepting the public draft of the 2020 Urban Water Management Plan and the 2020 Water Shortage Contingency Plan? Does that work?
I believe it does, Mr. Carmel.
We accept it.
I turn to the general manager and ask what he's actually seeking at this point, okay. Or district engineer. To me, it's a little muddled.
Yeah, so if I may, please.
Certainly.
Yeah. So the intent of this was just to, the question that was asked earlier by Ms. Dickinson about will they have opportunities to comment? Yes, they will on the 17th. Comments will also be accepted then. We didn't want that to be the first time anyone gives comments. We wanted, we wanted this to be an opportunity to receive comments. So, so really the thought here is, what the new thing that was really introduced here was the tiered penalties for stage 5 and 6. Mm-hmm. And if there's no changes to that, we'll keep moving forward with that into this the 17th.
So. Okay. So in actuality, what we're talking about is incorporation of the board comments that were made at the previous review.
Yes.
So we're accepting this draft, which has incorporated the board comments from the last public review. Mr. Carmel?
I don't think any formal action is necessary in that regard.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, this was tasked out as consideration, so.
I think they left an opening, but.
Okay.
Ray, tell me if you disagree. I don't think formal action is necessary.
No formal action is necessary. Yeah, unless there was a change, so. Yeah.
Right, okay. Director Gray?
Yeah, maybe no formal action, but maybe a informally, the feedback that the staff got from all of us, I don't know if any of it is specific enough to require any sort of alteration or rewording or anything like that. But I do think part of as I just understood the process of this item, the purpose of this item rather was to invite one more round of feedback from the board. Mm-hmm. And I offered feedback. Director Howell offered feedback, Director Farmer, Director Dean, we all offered feedback of some kind. So I guess the general instruction to incorporate whatever feedback makes sense, or whatever constructive feedback would help clarify the document. I don't think we should leave this session with this document, it's not subject to any change in the next week, because if there's some things that we can do to improve it, things that you don't improve it, I think they should be done. So that's just my thought.
Well, unless we can very specifically define what those are. I guess what we're doing is just passing this, what we're doing is having provided the opportunity for feedback to Mr. D'Anzo regarding some areas of potential fine-tuning that can be accomplished on the document, or some clarifications that will help in the public knowledge of the information being brought to them, and that it isn't necessary to take under consideration for that, and that he will incorporate that as possible and in clarification of information. Is that, and we won't worry about doing it as a vote. And I guess the other thing to keep in mind is that this will come back to us once again. Right. And that if there's something that is glaring, I don't necessarily see anything that's glaring. I think that it's probably a matter of interpretation or for clarification on certain things. And we got some of that today. So we can certainly wait until the final product comes to us at the next board meeting, and we'll have a chance to review that information. And if there's anything that absolutely has to be addressed, it can. With the knowledge also that it's available for it's available for revision down line, and unless board members can define very specifically for me things that they want to have. And Mr. Carmel, your hand is up again.
I don't want to stifle any board action, but I think what you just said is important. If there are very specific comments that the board wants included, then take a stab at it. But it has to be very clear cut. We have a week to implement. Yeah,
no, I agree. Mr. Weigold?
Yeah, I was just going to suggest, similar to our board walk functions, we can have Ray and whoever else he deems appropriate do some one-on-ones to address some of the issues that came up with each director.
I think that's an excellent suggestion.
Director Farmer's had his hand up for a little while.
Okay, thank you. His hand is over in the lighter part of the ceiling up at top, and so visually I couldn't see it on his screen, and I wasn't looking over there. I apologize, Director Farmer.
It's not a problem. I just wanted to ask Mr. Weigold, how much of an effort is being made, and there probably is some, and I'm not necessarily aware of it, but let's say how much of an effort. I bring this up because one of the members of the public talked about, you know, needing a public forum, a presentation, discussion, that type of thing, which is probably going to take place on the 17th, in other words, a week from today. How much of an effort, I know it's already been mentioned that the Urban Water Management Plan and the Water Shortage Contingency Plan are on the district website. How much of an effort is being made through social media, or it would be nice if there were like an article in the Cambrian, maybe, I don't know if there's anything in it this week, but maybe next week, alerting the public to this very important document and important discussion that would come from this. So what is the district doing to make this more available to the public with regard to the knowledge of this event taking place and how important it is?
Yes, great question. So we've done a lot of extra actions toward that end. We've advertised twice in the Tribune. We've put that on our website in the new news and the rolling scroller at the top, as Mr. D'Anzo had pointed out earlier in his presentation. And we scheduled this additional item for discussion today to really flesh out more issues. And so the fourth item will be really to do one-on-ones with the directors so that we can address any concerns that you have and discuss in a lot more detail some of those assumptions that we talked about during this item.
And Director Dean?
I have also seen it on CambriaCA.org,
and I have seen it in a couple places on social media, and I see Kathy Tanner's here as an attendee. I believe, if I'm correct, that Kathy Tanner also mentioned the meeting on the 17th in one of her stories in this week's Cambrian. So it is out there in social media. It's out there in a couple of other public places for people to see, as well as on our website and the legal notice.
Thank you, Director Dean.
And if I may have a 3-minute break when we're done with this discussion.
Yes, I wanted to get through, I wanted to get through this item, and we'll take a quick bio break. Yes, I agree. So is there any other option that people want to consider other than what GM Weigold had suggested about the one-on-ones with the individual directors so that that can be brought to Mr. Danza's attention? If not, then what I will do is go ahead and move on to making a statement that we are complete with this agenda item with the expectation of those boardwalks. Is that satisfactory for everyone? Mm-hmm. All right, excellent. That completes item 7B, and we are at 4:15. Let's take a 5-minute break. We'll return at 4:20.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm assuming that Director Gray will join us here momentarily. Okay, so what we're moving on to then is 8, the manager reports. And what I will do first is ask if there are any public comments regarding the manager reports that are coming forward. And Osana, I don't see any. Are there any written?
Yes, President Steidel, I have a I had a written report for the utilities report from Christine Heinrichs. Christine, I will give her a chance to talk. Go ahead, Christine.
Okay, thank you. I repeat my support for Director Farmer's suggestion to invite Gus Yates of Todd Groundwater and Cindy Cleveland of Cleveland Biological to give reports to the board and the public as to their work for the district. Well, board members and staff expressed concern over the cost of having these contractors give public reports with questions. Utilities manager Ray D'Angelo told the board at the January 17th meeting that he would include a provision for such a report in Mr. Yates' contract for over $75,000 for groundwater modeling and monitoring on San Simeon Creek to satisfy the County Planning Department and the California Coastal Commission request for the in-stream flow study on San Simeon Creek. So that should already be included. As for Dr. Cleveland, the district has paid her over $100,000 since 2016. The public is entitled to an in-person report from her. If these professionals require that they be appropriately compensated for their time, so be it. The board need not hesitate to pay them for their time and expertise. Let the public hear these reports and ask questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Do you have any other written?
That is all. No.
All right. Thank you, Asana. Up here we have another member of the public who wants to speak.
Yes, Dr. Bettenhausen, go ahead.
Thank you very much. My digestive system got me back here a bit late. Is this the point now to make a public comment about any and all reports that now follow in your agenda?
This is in item 8, so it's the manager's reports.
Uh-huh. So this is not yet 9?
No, it is not.
And we will have an opportunity then at the beginning of 9 to make our public comments then?
Absolutely.
Thank you for the clarification of that.
Thank you.
All right. So, GM Weigold, would you introduce by providing your general manager's report initially?
Yes, thank you, President Steidel and board. So I just want to note that this report is a carryover from last the second meeting in May, the May 20th report, basically unedited. So that's 3 weeks old, reporting on the prior 3 weeks happenings. And next Thursday, you'll receive the report for this month. So in some cases, some of this is overcome by events, but I'll just go through it real briefly. Back on April 27th, Spahn Ranch had held, the designer had held an initial planning meeting with the community. I received an updated report from them last week that I'll cover with you in more detail next Thursday, unless you so desire it today. But that report will be posted here in a few hours, and all the same information will be reported tonight in your package for next week.
Okay, and that's sufficient. Thank you.
As far as COVID-19, I'm reporting that we shifted to the orange tier in this report, but yesterday we shifted to the yellow tier. So that's updated as well there. I will add that staff is awaiting a lot of information from both the state and the county, and who are both working together with OSHA, who are putting employment rules together. And they held a special meeting the night before last to help iron out a great number of conflicts for workplace COVID working as everybody moves back into the work front. And there's a lot of legal issues and wrapped in and around all of that. So I won't attempt to get into any of that right now because it's all in work. But all of that will be pulled together. We'll work with district council's office to make sure that we have a proper reopening plan for the district, both in line with the state, county, and local health code rules. And everyone's obviously waiting for the new guidance. We did learn that the governor plans to retain the emergency status So I will probably be recommending, depending on that wording, maintaining that for the time being. So we're working on a reopening plan for the district. I wanted to point out on the grant side, it's become old news now, but we were selected by Congressman Carbajal's office as one of his 10 earmark proposals for the Congressional Community Fund project funding. Now, I'm not sure that all 10 from his district will make it forward, but it was pretty good that we were the only special district selected for a project between all of San Luis Obispo and all of Santa Barbara County. Pretty good competition for 65 submissions. All the others, the other 9 all went to cities. And I think there was one Native American reservation. We did, I'll be reporting in tonight's report for next week that we submitted to Senator Padilla the same package in hopes to get on earmark through the Senate version for an earmark. So we'll see how that all goes. Lastly, as we've been working through our strategic plan objective to increase transparency and communication, we continue to work on our website. It's interesting because as soon as we work with one group to become more transparent, another group working on something else contradicts that initial assessment. So we're trying to zero in to get it right there. But I've included the link to our refashioned listing of district policy. So that's now a quick link on our homepage to take you right to a listing of all our district policies. We're working with Directors Gray and
Howell.
And Director Howell to put it in a, organize it in a fashion that aligns with the California Special Districts Association format. And that concludes my report. Pending your questions, I will turn it over to Carlos Mendoza to talk about our facilities and resources side of the house.
Any questions or do we, okay. Carlos. Director Farmer. You're muted.
I'm sorry. My apologies. Well, I'm sure glad you didn't hear what I said before I turned the microphone on. Just a joke. So under district policies, I just want to mention the first item with regard to applying for grants for, you know, for the PG&E Sustainable Solutions Turnkey Program. Maybe at some point we could get an update on how that's moving forward.
Absolutely. Okay.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Carlos.
Right. Well, hello, everybody. Thank you for the opportunity to provide the board with a report on the facilities and resources activities. My report is included in the manager's report, and as General Manager Weigold mentioned, a report is back from about April to early May, and just wanted to highlight just a few items on that report that's included. Wanted to report to the board and the community that we have repaired the damages to the Santa Rosa Creek Trail. We were able to get 1,200 feet of trail repaired, and the trail is now opened back up to the public. I included in my report before and after pictures of the repairs. And as I mentioned in past reports, we did receive an estimate from the California Conservation Corps on those repairs at $46,000. That estimate did not include the replacement of the fence at the trailhead of that trail, and it did not include cleanup of debris and downed trees that were on the trail from the damage of the storm. And so when you look at the those additional items, we were probably looking at closer to $60,000 of repairs for that. But again, we were able to get that done in-house, and we were able to utilize one line item from the budget that we weren't going to be using. And so we were able to get the repairs done a little under $8,000. So happy that that's all done. I encourage everybody to come out and walk that trail. In my opinion, it's probably one of the best trails that we have here in town. And if you like birds and bird watching, it's one of the best trails to do that. So encourage everybody to come out and do that. We're also real busy right now with fire breaks on the Fiscalini Ranch. Every year we do 100 feet of fire breaks on the entire perimeter of the ranch. That's a combination of both tractor and hand crews, both with CCSD staff and also a contractor that helps us out as well, doing the fire break through the forest portion of the ranch. That also includes cleanup of downed trees and dead trees along that perimeter. And I've got a few pictures showing that activity as well in my report. And I'm happy to say that we're finishing up that work. We should be done with those fire breaks here in the next week or so. We did start earlier this year because we knew we had a lot of trees down due to the storm. We started about April doing those fire breaks on the ranch. And we'll be working on CCSD owned lots here in the next month and a half and trying to get those done before weed abatement. Also, just wanted to report on the one-way trail, the Bluff Trail. As many of you know, that's the signs were removed on May 3rd, and we moved that trail back to be in a two-way trail for the public. So that's probably old news, but I just wanted to make sure that everybody knew that, that's the case. And then one last thing, General Manager Weigel just wanted me to give you a quick update on the homeless encampments on CCSD properties. So we conduct weekly inspections on our properties, and we did that this Tuesday. We conducted an inspection on the Fiscalini Ranch and nearby open space properties. We did find a couple of encampments that were abandoned on the ranch. Most likely it was somebody going by, spending about a day, short time, picking up their stuff and then leaving. But, you know, again, leaving stuff behind, trash and some items. We'll be cleaning those up here in the next week or so. But a few months back, we did find a few encampments that were on the Caltrans right away, one underneath the bridge on Highway 1 and Santa Rosa Creek. And another one about 150 feet from there along the highway. We did take a quick pick at those encampments on Tuesday. They are still occupied. The one along the highway is now four times as large as it was a few months back. As we were approaching the encampment, we heard what appeared to be an engine. And so as we got closer, we were able to find a generator being used there. And along with that, there was a what appeared to be either a washer or a dryer in the encampment. I did contact Caltrans, and the maintenance supervisor and myself will be meeting on Wednesday of next week. And I'll be showing him those encampments so that they're aware of their location. That's my report, and I'm happy to answer any questions on that or anything else you might have.
Do I see Director Fermer?
I just want to briefly make a comment. Carlos, just want to commend you and your staff on the hard work that you've done, as well as the volunteers from FFRP, but as to what they do on the ranch. I just want to ask you, Carlos, and I've been curious about this for quite a while. You know, these excellent photos that really present what you're doing. Who takes those photos?
So the funny thing is, a lot of these pictures that I take, you see my staff in, you see volunteers. I'm the one that takes the photo, so I never get any credit for doing the work, even though I'm there.
Well, I figured it was you. That's why I wanted to bring it to our attention, because they really, you know, what is it? A picture's worth how many words? And your pictures certainly do that. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that.
Director Gray.
Yeah. Again, thank you, Carlos, for the great report and all the work you're doing out there, getting that trail fixed and all that. On the question about the homeless encampments on Caltrans right of way, especially the one like under the bridge, I guess my one question is, what is your experience with Caltrans? What can we expect from Caltrans essentially after, you know, with this process going forward? And do you need some help? Would you might need some help or something to push a little bit? Because my experience with dealing with Caltrans and other areas is that they're one of the less responsive agencies around. So I'd like you to get your, as much as you can say, get your take on what you expect going forward.
Yeah, so I've been in contact with Caltrans since last year, especially in regards to the larger encampments that we cleaned up across Camry Drive. And so I've had a few experiences with them. They are right now following state guidelines for COVID. And what those guidelines basically say is they have prioritized encampments. They will only remove encampments that are threatening infrastructure there. So in our visit next week, I'll show the supervisor what these encampments are or where they're at, and they will determine whether they're threatening their infrastructure. From past experience and what they've communicated to me, most likely they won't be able to do anything until their rules and their guidelines change in regards to dealing with encampments. Obviously, I've shared my concerns that the longer those encampments are there, the larger they will get. Especially like the one that has a generator there, there's obviously threat of fire. I will share those concerns, but again, they're dealing with their own issues and their own guidelines in regards to that. Can we make a little bit bigger push? Yeah. If the public wants to voice some concerns, Caltrans way, I'm sure that will be greatly appreciated as well.
Well, would there be any benefit to an individual or multiple board member or two board members showing up to the meeting that you're having with the Caltrans representative?
I'm happy to have board members there if that's what you wish.
It isn't a matter of what we wish. Is can it help bring influence to put underlining the fact that that it is threatening our infrastructure?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the more people involved, obviously, it shows that we have a bigger concern than just me showing them the sites. I'm happy to have whoever wants to come out and meet with the supervisor next Wednesday. And I'll let the general manager know the details, and then he can pass those on. And if somebody wants to be there, then he can let me know the details on that.
Right. Well, no more than two of us could show up, so we can coordinate back with the GM and figure out how we can help make that happen. Because we're also here to support you. You don't have to do this. You don't have to bear the burden on your own.
Yeah, and obviously, those encampments aren't on our property, and so. But again, they're on the boundary. They're on the fence line of our properties, and so that's the reason why I'm involved, keeping a tab on them and letting the Caltrans folks know as well.
Right. Absolutely. Okay. Are there any other questions or items that wanted to do direct with Carlos? Okay, Carlos, Thank you. Appreciate it as always, and for the work that you and the folks in your group do on our behalf.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Carlos.
And let's see, Jim Weigold, I believe Ms. Duffield's report is next.
Correct.
Hello, Pam.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, President Steidel, members of the board. As General Manager Weigold noted, this report is from the month of April. So again, information's a little bit outdated. So a little update on Tyler. During the month of April, we had put online accounts payable, miscellaneous cash receipting, and the payroll modules of the system. So staff was busy with those exercises and also training and just learning how to update our processes to accommodate the system change. We also prepared for the go live for utility billing. So that took place the first week or so of May and has continued through the month of May. I'll have more on that progress next week. And then as far as the audit goes, the auditors were here early May. They were here from May 3rd, Monday, May 3rd through May 5th, and they conducted the field work for the 19-20 fiscal year audit. They have completed all their field work and we're currently in the process of hopefully in the next week or so starting to draft the financial statements. So everything is moving along quickly. They're much more familiar with our work papers and our processes and just the district as a whole. So they were able to get their work papers updated and move forward with the audit very quickly this time. So more to follow on that as well. Other than that, I don't have much more information to share with you, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have for me.
Any directors? I'm not seeing any. So thank you, Ms. Duffield. And we actually have finished and gotten to Director Farmer.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just moving a little slowly here today, as we can see. So I was going to bring this up as a future agenda item. It just popped into my head.
Well, can we save it for future agenda items?
Well, it's with regard to Ms. Duffield.
But so, it's a future agenda item, right?
Well, I want to ask her a question.
Oh, okay.
So one of the issues that's been of concern lately is the cost of the facility on San Simeon Creek Road. And there's been various amounts that have been put out there for public consumption in recent weeks and months. I'm glad to see that Tyler Incode is just about finished and the audit is just about finished, because I didn't bring it up before then because I know you've been like overwhelmed with so much. Is there a possibility at some point in the relative near future that you could actually address the issue of determining what the cost has been of this facility in the last 7 years? Would you be able to do that?
Yes. So we did include that at the time. I think it was maybe 2 months ago, if my memory is correct.
Right.
I did address that in the finance manager report, and the general manager also addressed that in his general manager report. And that was at the time when we were informing the board and the public that we had received litigation funds. So we did mention that then. We did have some information that was presented to the board, I think in my finance manager's report, maybe last month, or I guess we missed last month, maybe the month before, that we do need to have a very lengthy discussion with the board in the near future in regards to how to use the litigation funds. And at that time, it seems like the appropriate time to have that in-depth discussion of what the costs have been, you know, what the loan funds were, what the grant funds received were, you know, how much has been paid on the loan to date, how much has been paid on interest to date, and all that information. So it seems like an appropriate discussion to have as the board is contemplating how to use the litigation funds best. So I can't say that will happen in the month of July, because, you know, here we are halfway through June almost. But, you know, hopefully that could happen in August. I'm guessing in August to September, we could probably have those discussions.
All right. I appreciate the feedback. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for Ms. Duffield? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Duffield. Appreciate that. We're actually getting you at least away from this piece of your work content before 5 o'clock. This would be a new record. Okay, moving on then to the utilities report. Mr. Danzo. Hello again.
Hello again. Yeah, thank you, President Seidel. And I know I have 10 minutes, so I will move accordingly. So utilities report for activities done in April. So it's a little bit outdated, but some good things happened then that I wanted to make mention of. First off, in the wastewater treatment plant, I proudly give kudos to our operator, Tony Artho, for being integral in repurposing that existing surge tank we have out there. This is a surge tank that that's required, well, that would prevent surges from happening on the effluent line that goes from our plant to the San Simeon Creek facility, or the WRF, I mean. And there's always been a danger there of that not being operational, and it's not been operational for years. And the fact that we were able to repurpose it and get it operational is, I'm very proud of our team for doing such. Another thing that I want to skip to water, even though good things are happening in the collection systems as well. But I do want to make mention that water meters are continuing to be identified for the upcoming water meter upgrade. And I know a question was asked about the water meters regarding residential and commercial, and all water meters 1.5 inches and below will be new. So essentially all residential meters will be new, but commercial meters will be rebuilt, but will be compatible with the new system that's coming up. And we hope to be able to bring that for you in the next couple of months. And I also want to give kudos in our water department to Adam Steventon. He is now a certified backflow prevention inspector. So now we're able to do those jobs in-house now. So kudos to him for that. Also wanted to let everyone know that our well levels are trending below average. We started noticing this around April, you know, right around this time, and it is continuing, and I'll bring it up into our report next week for the month of March. So we do want to consider reminding people about water conservation efforts because of that. And regarding the WRF, the piezometers were installed in April. So that's old news, but so those were installed. And one of our vendors that inspects our ultraviolet, our UV sensors to help for the disinfection and oxidation of our treated water for WRF, did need some repair. A couple of ballasts were deemed inoperable, and mainly due to the corrosive weather out there near the coast. So that's going to happen. That happened in the month of April. And in April, we also announced that we will be doing the RO, the RO audits in June, and we will be starting that within a couple of weeks here. The flume switching now to water conservation. The flume devices. It says here that there are 56 available, but I can tell you right now they're sold out. they're all used. Nice. Now. Yeah, and also regarding the tech talk topic relating to water conservation legislation, I do want to remind people, you know, that SB 606 and AB 1668, those have to do with water conservation targets of 55 gallons per person per day indoor. But it's, you know, a lot of misinformation regarding, you know, the type of control that the state would have. But it's, those are aggregate numbers. No one individual or commercial is going to be targeted for any of these water conservation, but it is an effort community wide. So I wanted to make mention of that. But there's a description of that in the utilities report as well. And I do want to make mention, like I said, our well levels are trending low, but I'm also concerned, I wanted to raise a concern that our demand is going up. So, and this started in April and it's continuing to trend in May. But for example, the difference between the water use in March and April was about 7 acre feet more than it was last year. And even the year before that, because, you know, last year you can probably use the reason of COVID, but even prior to COVID, it's about 7 acre feet more of water demand that's being used. So next month we will be, you know, sounding more of an alarm and a concern about water demand and reminding people of water conservation. So that's the report. And I'm going to be able for any questions.
Well, I think what we're going to need to do though is extend the meeting to do that. And considering that we still have our committee reports and so forth, I would suggest extending to 5:30 if the board's willing.
I'll second that.
Okay. Excellent. That's what we'll do then. Sorry for the interruption, Ray. And are there any questions mm-hmm. from any of the directors? Director Farmer.
First, I want to comment on the last thing that Ray said about water levels going down, but demand going up. I spend time downtown doing various projects, that type of thing. And we have a lot of people visiting this community, and they're not just here on the weekends now. And I don't want to say that it's because of people that are coming here and staying, if not more than a day, although we get a lot of people just visiting for the day or overnight. But I think it's the increased tourism that is probably having as much of an impact on increased demand and usage as anything else. It might also be vacation rentals, but I'd like to think that the people that live here, and of course we have new people that are moving here that might, as we know, that might not be as aware of the dilemma that we face here every year with regard to water availability and water usage. So in some, I don't know how we get that word out to the new people that are moving here, but that's a comment that I wanted to make. I also want to ask Ray some questions with regard to his report under the now named WRF facility. So he mentions here in the second very brief sentence about vendor technicians being on site in April to assist staff in testing and replacing equipment such as chemical dosing pumps, chemical lines, and air lines. I took a look at the expenditure report from last month on the May the 20th. A chemical dosing pump was just under $5,500. So I just want to ask Ray, because it says here also going further down, several ballasts were identified for replacement. Extras were ordered. One of the screens in the UV system was determined to be non-operable due to exposure to the elements over several years. So that's probably going to have to be replaced down here. RO filters have been stored in manufacturing packaging and are nearing their recommended storage time limit, installing the filter and so forth. And also there's going to be a complete maintenance run early later in the summer. So I'm wondering, Ray, how much can we anticipate more parts having to be replaced, upgraded, this type of thing for the facility as we move forward?
Well, I think... I'm not going to know that completely until we start operating. We actually start operating it on a regular basis, which we are in constant readiness for it. And the fact that we are going to be doing RO testing is a testament to that. The challenge here is that it is in an environment that's close to the coast, and a lot of those equipment are uncovered, which, you know, that's why it is something that we hope to include in CIPs moving forward. It's hard to say. I guess yes, we can anticipate more things breaking down and corroding, but it will be difficult to say without us running it on a regular basis. We run it for testing and things like that to be sure everything's operational. And that's how we discover some of these things. When the vendor comes and does some of their inspections, we do get these recommendations for these things. And even things that don't have vendor come and do inspections, we are noticing different things too. And it's a given, like, you know, it's not uncommon for chemical lines and air lines to be replaced. That's, you know, whether you're running something or not, those are going to need to be replaced on a somewhat regular basis. So, it's not going to end. Like, you know, we're not going to fix something and then suddenly we're not going to be fixing anything anymore. But we're going to be discovering more of these things as the time goes on.
So Ray, if I could ask you, and I know there's like these concrete cylinders out there that have various chemicals in them, which has always, you know, troubled me because it's in an environmentally sensitive habitat area. So I just want to ask you, what is a chemical dosing pump and replacing chemical lines, which I'm assuming have to do with, you know, the chemicals that are on site there? I guess there's no reason for alarm in this area, but I'm just curious, what is a chemical dosing pump?
What is it? Well, it's basically just a pump that pumps. In this case, it was sodium hypochlorite, which is essentially bleach. And it's used for our cleaning in place, and it's also used for disinfection of our RO system. I mean, not ROs, our filters. So yeah, it's just a pump that pumps that particular chemical, and it's different from and we call it a chemical dosing pump because it's not like a pump that you would normally think where an impeller spins, but it's more like of a pump that moves this little actuator that squeezes out a controlled volume each time. So yeah, it's kind of a cool little pump. It's squeezing out a tube of toothpaste every time. That's kind of how I would say it.
So if I could ask a follow up on one other thing, Ray, you mentioned down here at the bottom of the report on the facility, doing a complete maintenance run I'm assuming that's in the relative near future. How long does a complete maintenance run take?
Not very long. Yeah.
Okay. How often is it done, by the way?
Well, it's supposed to be done like every year. So, yeah.
And how long?
It's only like a couple of days.
Couple of days. Okay. All right.
Director Gray, I think you had a question.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the report, Ray. I did have a question that might be something that is taken up next week, but on the issue of the aquifer below normal and so forth, it touches on a question I hear all the time from people about when. Well, it comes in two forms. Do we have enough water to get through the dry season? And two, when will we be starting up the WRF? And I was wondering if there's anything that you're thinking of having scheduled as a public communication, maybe to go out with the water bills, just as a forecast for, you know, a forecast for the supply going forward through the rest of the season, so that people can really get some definitive information in their hands as to what to expect. Or are we ready? Are we able to do that yet?
So that's a good question, and I'm going to tell, you know, I'm hoping that I would not do that on my own. like next week, we are going to suggest a stage that we're going to be in for the new system, the new six stages, and that stage that we recommend would be how we would communicate to the public. Mm-hmm. So, it's a combination of we would communicate to you first, and then when you direct us to communicate to the public, mm-hmm. That's how we would do it. I don't intend to sound the alarm on my own. I'm not an alarmist. Mm-hmm.
What stage would it be, or can you say?
We would probably be in stage three.
Three in the new system?
Yes, in the new system.
New system. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Director Dean?
I just have a real quick question. I know we have more agenda items to catch.
Yeah, I'd really like to be able to not push anything off again.
I know, this is a real simple question. Okay, in your water report under activity, lists manual meter reads and locates for billing purposes at 1,287. Do we actually have 1,287 meters that have to be read manually, or is that a combination of those two particular items in that? Is it locates and manual reads, or is that the number of manual reads?
It's a combination of the two. It's a combination of when manual billing, when someone has a question about their bill, and Miriam from the office asks us to go out there and do a manual read. That's one, and then the other one is when the guys do their billing, when they would do their meter reads, they would drive by expecting a beep, and it instead of getting a beep, they hear a buzz. So they would have to go there, dig out the meter, uncover all the bushes wherever that it's covered in, and then read the meter that way. So that would be considered another man. It's a combination of those two.
So how many meters do we actually have to manual read right now because they're not transmitting the information anymore?
Well, I think in this one we said 700. Wait, was it? Well, I think it's like close to 1,000. I think the last time that Jim told me this, that it's like I said, it's not so. There's the official bad meters, okay, that are out there that you heard about. But there's also these meters that we're having to go in there and, you know, expecting a beep and it doesn't beep. And so,
okay.
So that's why we do really need to get a new metering system going. And we intend to bring that to you soon. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Ray, I don't know if I should interject this, but I noticed that Jim Green is one of the attendees. If he wants to follow up and maybe give some more accurate information, although I'm sure you did that as well.
I think I answered the question for Jim.
Right. All right. Well, it appears then that we have finally exhausted Ray in terms of his presentations today and his
information for his utility report. And seeing that there are no other questions, I guess we'll go ahead and close that part of our agenda out. And thank you, as always, Ray, for your diligence and your responsiveness to the myriad of questions that come to you from the board and from elsewhere. So thank you. So I'd like to move forward, please, to the last increment on our agenda. No, next to the last, because we have the future agenda items. The board member committee and liaison reports, number 9, and I'll call for public comment on any one of the reports that had been submitted. So, Osana?
Yes, Christine Heinrichs had submitted a written report, and I'm sure she'll say the same. Go ahead, Christine Heinrichs.
Thank you. Yes, I'm commenting on item 9E, the ad hoc intent to serve committee. I thank board members Farmer and Dean for their work on this issue and their report. I support their recommendations that these various named new construction permits be brought before the board for discussion and full public airing. As you know, none of these permits can legally be granted, and the Coastal Commission will deny them. While the board may think that ignoring the building moratorium, the growth management ordinance, previous Coastal Commission decisions, and common sense relieves the district of responsibility, the Coastal Commission's patience with the district's stubborn intransigence is wearing thin. At the last meeting, when the commission was required to deal with one of these permits again in November 2020, the commission suggested one solution would be to put up a billboard in Cambria saying, "Don't believe these people." Now would be a good time for the board to decide to reverse its practice and start telling the truth. There are no grandfathered projects. The Coastal Commission has settled this point in several decisions, including the 2019 Hadean decision, when they said, quote, "This exception from the moratorium for these pipeline projects was not due to any finding that they would not lead to harm to the existing water supply from adding more water demand to the system. Rather, it was considered a matter of equity and fairness to honor CCSD commitments made at the time, with the possibility of attendant legal risk if such commitments were not recognized, provided they were strictly limited in the manner described above. There were only some 64 of these grandfathered pipeline projects, but there are no more such pipeline projects remaining today. And in the Sitimi decision, there were originally a limited number of these grandfathered pipeline projects, and there are no more such pipeline projects pending today. As a result, the cumulative effect of the moratorium and the certified LCP is that currently the LCP effectively prohibits approval of new water service in Cambria, taking into account the actual facts and reality on the ground. Forget grandfathered. Send them more permits. They will only be more frustrated with you. Stop approving new construction permits. But if you feel you want to approve them, please discuss and approve them in public meetings. The Coastal Commission will be interested to view the video clips of your discussion and hear you defy their decisions when they hear future appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. All right. Not seeing any other requests for public comment. Were there any written, Osana?
No other written comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So, if I may, I'll go ahead and work through the reports that were here. For the most part, there really isn't anything additionally to address in that they were reports out from the directors for meetings that they had had for standing committee and then internal or other community committees, as well as the FFRP report. I would like to drop two
the intent to serve letters ad hoc committee report. And first of all, I really do want to thank the committee for the, it's a very detailed fact-based report for the board. And the definitions were well composed for understanding the differences between each of the kinds of categories. There are a lot of recommendations that have been made here, and we have a need to address those and have some board action come from this. So unless a majority of the board members take exception, I'm going to direct that this report and its recommendations go to staff for formulation of an agenda item to discuss and consider regarding the ad hoc's recommendations. And I'm also going to suggest that that happens no later than July 15, 2021 meeting. Are there any issues that anyone has with that? Director Farmer?
Yeah, I just want to say that I shouldn't speak for Director Dean, but we appreciate you saying that because we were going to request that because it was ultimately meant to be written as an agenda item for discussion and consideration by the board.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Thank you so much. And it's obviously going to change a few policies that the district uses at this present time, but we just feel that giving the board more oversight in this very important area is necessary in moving forward in these, let's say, unpredictable times. So there we are.
The report itself was excellent, and this has been formulating for quite a while. It's actually goes back to the beginning of the year, even as far as December, that there had been forward motion on making or having this end product come to fruition as a report so that we can take it forward as an agenda item. So, Asan, I guess what it would be is that the agenda item is for... Well, I pretty much outlined it, and I can give that to you also offline so that we don't have to go through that additionally. Is there any other comment on any of the others that anyone has? Director Dean.
I don't have a comment on the others, but I just wanted to say that Director Farmer and I did spend a considerable amount of time on this, as did the members of staff and Tim Carmel, who helped us along with making sure that all of our information was correct and that we had all of the documents that we needed to study to do this report. We spent a lot of time with Utilities Manager D'Enzo and his staff, as well as running everything past District Council, who was very helpful in making sure everything was worded right and that we were not putting in anything that was inaccurate. So I do appreciate this was a group effort, and I appreciate everybody's time and all the time that Director Farmer spent with me working on this as well. So we
thank you for that feedback.
Joint effort between Director Farmer and I and a lot of other people.
And a lot of folks.
And I really appreciate it, and I'm glad we're almost done.
Wow, it's an excellent product that you brought to us, and it'll be very valuable information that the board can make good decision-making.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to add, and I think I might have already said this, that this has been a very important issue, over the years, and both Director Dean and myself really appreciate the opportunity to have been, been given the responsibility to deal with this situation, and glad to see that at one point in the very near future, it's going to be discussed and considered by the board. And I think this will help, I believe members of the public will be relatively satisfied by the ultimate outcome of this document. So thank you.
Thank you. I don't see hands on any other items for discussion. So moving to item 10, agenda items, I actually have I have two things that I'd like to get placed on agenda. And one of them is the discussion and consideration for transition to in-process meetings. And I'd like to get that on the agenda for July 8th, if possible. Mr. Weigold, if it needs to go to the 15th because of information that you're obtaining, that's fine. Or we can do it no later than July 15th.
Just to correct the record, instead of in process, I take it you mean in-person meetings.
Yes, thank you. I'll restate it, discussion consideration for transition to in-person meetings. And Director Dean, was that your hand up for that also?
Yes, it was, thank you.
Okay, the other agenda item was actually has to do with one of the items that was on consent agenda. And that was the policy for how to fill a vacancy. I had no problem with the matrix, which was, you know, very, very specific and very detailed with explanations. But in reading the policy itself, I recognized that what the policy was a process. It was the suggested process for what needed to happen. What it did not address, and there still needs to be specific information developed for, is what will be the internal procedure for doing it. And talking through the balloting, who's responsible for, you know, doing or gathering the information as a result of votes? How do we maintain that information? All of those kinds of things. So my suggestion for an agenda item is to direct staff to develop the internal procedure for conducting the process outlined in policy 4150, filling board vacancies. And just looking at our upcoming agendas, I think that we can fit this in on our July 15 agenda. If GM Weigold feel that that's sufficient time for staff to develop that kind of thing, we can always push it out to August. It doesn't have the same sensitivity that the first recommendation I gave does.
Yeah, I just want to balance that because Ms. Duffield's time finishing up Tyler is number one priority right now.
But yeah, it's Tyler, and I recognize also final budget would be in that same timeline. So again, why don't we go no later than the second meeting in August? Maybe that would be
able to
provide sufficient time. Any comment by any of the directors regarding those agenda items? Director Farmer?
I just want to bring this up once again, and Ms. Heinrich's already addressed it, but and I'm asking, you know, Ray, if he can arrange, and this is this is no reflection on Ray and his knowledge and what he can provide to the board and other members of staff with regard to the in-stream flow study and so forth. But considering Mr. Yates, Gus Yates from Todd Groundwater, considering his historical memory and many years of working with the district, I'd just like to get an update from him as to how he sees the situation with the in-stream flow study and maybe what else he can bring to our attention, especially considering, as Ray said, the declining availability of water moving rather quickly in the scheme of things in the creek. And also, you know, I was talking about Ms. Cleveland, our biologist, and, you know, getting reports from her with regard to the health of the creek, the health of the habitat. She, it was about 2 or 3 months ago, she had a report just on frogs. That's all it said, $2,000 frogs. And frogs are one of those indicators of overall environmental health. And I'm thinking, I would just like to hear from her with regard to that item and any other items that she can give us with regard to the health of this environmentally sensitive habitat area and these really challenging environmental times. So that's why I'm bringing that up. And hopefully Ray can follow up on that and maybe we can have them attend in a July meeting. Thank you.
Well, I think that's probably better directed to GM Weigold, because if we're going to give staff directions, it has to be through the general manager.
Okay.
So I saw that you making some notes, Mr. Weigold.
I did. I'm going to check with the utility manager on that, and we'll come back to the board.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anything else? Any other agenda items that anyone has? All right. Seeing none, then we are finished with today's report, our board meeting.
Well, considering we had to do part of last time as well as this one, I think less than three and a half hours is more than adequate. And we're grateful to be able to do that.
I agree. I think it's been excellent. All right. Then I thank you all for your attendance and participation today. And thank you very much to the staff members who have devoted a great deal of time to being here with us today, as well as yesterday for a meeting that went longer than expected. Yeah. So thank you all, and I will see everyone on the 17th.
Thank you.
I want to thank all the attendees for their participation.
Yeah.
Thank you.